This podfic contains explicit sex scenes. 2 to Tango, a hockey RPF fan work written by The Hoyden and 20-something and read by Lunchy. Sid's only ever felt he was meant to be two places, on the ice and in front of a classroom. But he looks at the Penguins, then at Gino, and wonders if Gino is right.
So you got the navy blues. I took off my shirt and shoes. I feel like a criminal. I love you like an animal. I'm laying out my Sunday clothes. I can't get my suitcase closed. And I know that I swear a lot, but I'm really sure that
Sid likes his curriculum to be fairly flexible. There's no sense in strictly scheduling everything, considering the unpredictability of snow days, the yearly flu week, and the general ineffability of kids. He's had years where lessons that were no problem suddenly didn't work and had to be completely rewritten, where entire units needed to be flipped around. There's really only one thing he absolutely insists on, and that's the twice-yearly trip to the zoo. The Pittsburgh Zoo is actually a zoo and aquarium, which gives Sid even more scope for his lessons, dealing with ecology and habitats, conservation and environmentalism. They also have great classes where the kids actually get to interact with the animals, and Sid really thinks that it fosters a sense of responsibility in them. Seeing the animals and topics they discuss in class really engages them. They do a wonderful program about local wildlife, which gets them thinking about hibernation and seasonal change too. But Sid's favourite is Penguin Pals. The kids go nuts because penguins are cute and because they're in Pittsburgh and the penguins are a big deal. Lots of the kids wear Pens jerseys or t-shirts on that field trip, just as excited to meet actual penguins as he thinks they would be to meet the penguins in the NHL. They have an amazing time and always, always pile back onto the bus afterwards delirious with joy and totally exhausted. But that's not the only reason Sid likes the zoo. The zoo actually lets teachers in for free to pre-plan class trips. And at first, Sidney goes because he wants to be thorough in his preparation, to make sure his kids get the most out of the trip that they possibly can. Then he goes because it makes sense to plan out not just the upcoming trip, but to look ahead for opportunities later in the year. And even though Sid knows the zoo backwards and forwards now, he likes to take the opportunity to go for himself, to spend a day seeing the animals, going at his own pace, not thinking about lesson plans and curriculum. Well, mostly not thinking about that. And then one day, he runs into a tall, tall, lanky zookeeper and almost upends a bucket of fish over their feet. Sid is scribbling notes to himself on the zoo map about the new red panda instead of watching where he's going. Sorry, Sid says, holding the map in front of him like a shield. The zookeeper just smiles at him and says,
"Much more danger for you than me. I used to fish stink."
He pats Sid's shoulder gently, as if to make sure there was no harm done, and he has the warmest, friendliest eyes Sid has ever seen. Then he makes to leave, and Sid blurts out,
"Could you please point me in the direction of the aquarium?"
Sid knows where the aquarium is, up the hill, past the shark and polar bear. He has no idea why he's not letting the zookeeper get on with his job.
"You like fish?" the zookeeper says.
Yes, but I'm really here for the penguins," Sid says.
The zookeeper smiles wide then, looking so honestly delighted that Sid's breath catches.
"Penguins best," he says agreeably, like it is both a universal truth
and a secret just between them. Come, I show you. Because Sid managed to knock into the new lead zookeeper for the entire penguin exhibit, who was recently of Russia, having had far more education to take care of penguins than Sid has had to take care of small humans, or so Sid gathers.
Do I call you Dr. Malkin? Sid says hesitantly. It's important to get these things straight, because Sidney respects education above all else, and he wants to give Dr. Malkin his due, and pronounce his name correctly, for that matter. His name badge says E. Malkin, very clearly, so Sidney thinks it was a good bet. There is that wide grin again, just a touch shy.
You call me Evgeny.
Evgeny, Sid repeats, carefully and slowly. Malkin ducks his head a bit, still smiling, and then he looks in Sid's eyes again and says,
Maybe you call me Gino?
Normally, Sid would argue, it doesn't feel respectful enough, but when he says, Gino, the look he gets in return is warm, and Sid forgets to breathe for a moment, much less argue. Sid doesn't think it's actually possible to overplan a school trip, but even he might be forced to admit that this sounds a little excessive. You went to the zoo again? Flower says incredulously. Sid, it's a field trip, not a moon landing. The kids will learn some stuff, someone's going to cry, and you'll be so wiped out at the end of the day you'll swear off it forever. I will not, Sid says defensively. Anyway, I've done this before. I'm great at field trips. So great that you've made how many pre-planning trips to the zoo now? Flower asks sweetly. Proper preparation prevents poor performance, Sid says stiffly, and Flower has to put his head down on the break room table to laugh and laugh. Sid feels totally fine dismissing Flower's judgment, because any field trip planned by Flower would probably result in a lawsuit and the 10 o'clock news. But what are you even doing there? It's the same, like, 10 exhibits. The animals don't do anything different. It's the same monkeys scratching the same balls. I've been to the zoo. It's not that interesting. Sid neatens up a pile of math homework and very carefully does not look at Flower, nor does he think about the fact that he's been hanging around the aquarium a lot. I'm thinking about volunteering there, actually. Oh my god, stop it! Flower scolds him. If you wanted to be Dudley Do-Right, you should have stayed in Canada. You should have stayed in Canada. Someone has to teach these monsters French. Fine, be a parody of yourself. Thursday's practice, though. You in? Usual time, Sid says, perking up. Flower rolls his eyes affectionately. Elementary education and hockey really are the only things that get you going, aren't they? What else is there? Sid says, and starts to grade. Sid tells himself very firmly that Saturday that he's not going to bother Gino, Dr. Malkin, again. He's just going to stop by the penguin exhibit briefly. 5 minutes, tops. It looked like there were fewer penguins the last time he was here, so he just wants to check in. He hadn't counted on seeing Gino inside the exhibit, and Gino sees him right away and waves, breaking into a wide, happy smile, and Sid smiles right back, helplessly. Then Gino ducks down and slides sideways through one of the two small doors and disappears, and Sid tries to tell himself that he's not feeling disappointed. He nearly jumps out of his skin when Gino turns up behind him.
Sorry, not mean to scare, Gino says,
but he's grinning slyly like he's not that upset that he did.
No, I wasn't scared, Sid says, unconvincingly.
You didn't have to stop whatever you were doing. Gino shrugs.
Work still beats her when I come back. Not sure if you still here when I done, he explains.
I've been thinking about coming here more often. Volunteering, Sid says, and then winces preemptively because Gino must hear that all the time. The penguins are cute. Who wouldn't want to help out? Gino, well, there's no other way to put it except that Gino lights up.
You like animals?
He says. And when Sid nods dumbly, Gina grabs his hand and says,
Almost time to feed. You come help.
Oh, I... What? Sid says, but lets himself be pulled along. Gino's hand is big, and his fingers are long where they're wrapped around Sid's hand. Gino leads him through a room with refrigerators, buckets, and several long, clean steel tables, probably where they get together the meals for the penguins, then even deeper down a hall to a tiny little office. Gino waves him to have a seat in a guest chair that has seen better days, before sitting down in his office chair. The walls are mostly covered in art of a style Sid is extremely familiar with. Crayon and marker, sketchy black and white blobs with orange and yellow accents. There are uneven letters writing out thank yous, usually with neat print handwriting at the bottom giving the class and teacher's name. Sid feels a real moment of connection with Gino, staring at the dozens of drawings, the obvious pride Gino takes in them, the way they're carefully affixed to the corkboard. These are so great, Sid says sincerely.
Kids great, Gino says.
And then he scans the board and then brushes his fingers against one, and Sid realizes that's a letter from his kids 2 years ago when they'd first started the Penguin Pals, back when a woman with grey hair had been in charge of the penguin exhibit.
Lemieux Academy, Gino says, and flicks his eyes at Sid. You know Mr. Crosby?
Sid first wonders how Gino knows where he teaches, and then realizes he's wearing a fleece with the school crest, the same as is on the letterhead.
Yeah, I mean, that's me, Sid says awkwardly.
Gino's gaze turns speculative.
Old letter, he says. Not new to penguins. You here before?
A few class trips, Sid allows, which elides the sheer number of pre-planning visits he's made so far.
Feed penguins now? Maybe you come more often, Gino says,
and then pulls out a pair of navy blue rubber boots from behind the desk.
You need boots first. Don't want to ruin nice shoes.
Sid is about to tell Gino that it's fine, he couldn't possibly, when Gino comes around the desk and looks speculatively between the boots and Sid's feet. Gino slips a hand around Sid's ankle, lifting his foot to compare the soles of his shoe with one of the boots.
Oh, think we same size,
Gino says, grinning up at him. And Sid just nods because he can't force anything past the breath caught in his throat, just from Gino's thumb brushing against the knob on the outside of his ankle.
Lucky.
Yeah, Sid manages. And it feels like he takes forever to remember he has to actually pull off his shoes to put the boots on. But in his defense, it's hard to remember anything with Gino crouched down, smiling at him. Like maybe if Sid had waited any longer, Gino would have just done it all for him. The ends of his pants tuck easily into the top of the boots, and they're dressed pretty much identically now.
So much for only taking 5 minutes to look at penguins, Sid thinks.
But he takes the plastic gloves Gino hands him and follows him. Gino snags two buckets from one of the long stainless steel tables, and before he hands one to Sid, he narrows his eyes and says, teasingly stern,
Penguins love you too much, you say.
Love me? Sid says disbelievingly.
I'm pretty sure they only love the fish. Don't know very much about penguins, Gino says, lips twitching.
But he hands a bucket over.
Maybe you'll learn today.
In the end, he's not really convinced the penguins like him at all, but they do love the fish, and Sid tries to be equitable in his distribution, even if it means sort of reaching over and around some bigger, more aggressive penguins to get the little ones. Gino is nearby with his own group of penguins, and one thing seems clear. They do actually love Gino. They trill at him, little squawking penguin songs, and Gino speaks to them in low, rumbling Russian. Sid watches, transfixed, until one of his penguins headbutts his knee, as if to let him know he's falling down on the job. But even if the penguins are only in it for the horrifying-smelling mackerel, Sid isn't ashamed to say he's absolutely sold. As he's gently nudging apart a pair of the bigger penguins who are having a disagreement over who gets to eat the collection of fish heads at the bottom of Sid's bucket, he
he realizes he's feeding penguins. The whole thing is surreal and humbling and amazing. And Sid can't help his embarrassingly huge smile. "Hey, hey," Sid says softly, and the penguins call back to him as if to say, "Hey yourself." Sid bursts out laughing, the awful honking one that only his family doesn't make fun of him over. The penguins stare up at him, then honk back loudly and excitedly.
"You already talk to penguins, speak their language,"
Gino says, grinning at him.
"They're happy."
Sid can feel his cheeks heating. "Good," he makes himself say, because the penguins do look happy, little flaps of their wings in punctuation to their calls.
"His compliment," Gino assures him. "They're picky."
They're also apparently full, or have realized all the food is gone, because they start to toddle off, diving into the water or lazily laying on the fake rocky outcroppings. "That went quickly," Sid says, trying not to feel disappointed that it's over already.
"You're not done yet. More penguins to feed," Gino says, smiling widely. "Unless you need to go somewhere."
Sid shakes his head vehemently.
"Come this way. Careful," Gino says.
And once they've loaded back up on fish, urges Sid through a different small door, which opens to another room with more fake outcroppings, but also plenty of real rocks making up nests.
"Are they already laying eggs?"
Sid asks, peering over at one penguin pair, but careful not to get too close in case they did have an egg to defend.
"First eggs, yes," Gino says,
but he looks oddly dissatisfied.
"Is that not good?"
Sid asks, puzzled.
"First egg always small. Sometimes they hatch, but all penguins lay second big egg. That one always hatch."
Sid frowns.
"Wait, what happens to the smaller egg?"
Gino shrugs.
"Penguin secret," he says. "Maybe someday they tell me."
Sid feels, okay, maybe more upset about this than he should. But he's been getting invested in all these penguins laying an egg they might not even sit on, an egg that will probably never produce a chick. Gino strips off his gloves and lays one warm, large hand on Sid's shoulder.
"Just how it is," he says.
But the expression on his face suggests that he understands how Sid feels all too well.
"Come tomorrow. See for yourself."
"You want me to come again?" Sid asks, surprised.
"You'll not come back. Penguins miss you,"
Gino tells him, even though the penguins are totally ignoring them both, too busy perfecting their nests to notice the buckets of fish. "I loved it," Sid admits, sounding a little breathless, gushing.
"Yes,"
Gino says, sure, with a smile that suggests he knew Sid would. "It's really okay for me to come again?" Sid checks. He would hate to get Gino in trouble. Gino shrugs, his smile turning a little conspiratorial.
"I make okay. Many people all favor."
"I don't want to be difficult," Sid starts, only to have Gino wave him off.
"You love. Meant to be here," Gino says seriously.
Sid's only ever felt he was meant to be two places, on the ice and in front of a classroom. But he looks at the penguins, then at Gino, and wonders if Gino is right. Gino said he should, so Sid tries very hard not to feel weird about his plans to go to the zoo the next day. It's still the weekend, still his time off. He can do what he wants. He feels a little more prepared today. Or at least he hopes he is. At least he's dressed smarter. His oldest jeans and one of his high school hockey t-shirts he wouldn't mind losing to unidentifiable aquarium muck. He's hoping Gino puts him to work doing something boring but useful. As much as he enjoyed feeding the penguins, he's sure there are things he can be doing that just need to be done. He can't take up Gino's attention. He has no illusions that Gino has the time to spend babysitting him. That doesn't change the fact that he kind of wants to take up Gino's attention, even though he's pretty sure that's selfish. He gets to the front entrance of the zoo and gives the ticket person Gino's business card as instructed,
and he thinks that they'll probably just wave him in, but instead, he radios for Gino. There's a crackling, staticky answer, and the slightly bored-looking guy tells Sid to meet Dr. Malkin at guest services. A few minutes after he gets there, Gino is jogging up to the building, a wide, happy smile on his face. Sid checks to see if there's someone behind him, but no, Gino seems to be smiling at just him. "Hi," Sid says, when Gino comes to a halt in front of him. "Good morning?"
"Good, yes," Gino says. "Comes this way, lot to do."
That's just what Sid wanted to hear. So he falls into step alongside Gino, already anticipating some good, hard work. But Gino doesn't head to the aquarium. Instead, he takes Sid inside.
"We take picture, get your ID card,"
Gino says, holding the front door open for Sid. They're greeted by a tall man in a suit that looks like he took a roll around on the floor in it. The tie he's wearing has a blinding pattern of brightly coloured animals.
"So, you are Mr. Sidney Crosby," he says,
in a tone that Sid can't decode, but that manages to make him sincerely uncomfortable anyway. He murmurs something at Gino in Russian that sounds... well, Sid's sure he doesn't know. Gino barks something back, likewise in Russian, which only makes the other guy grin.
"Sid, this is Alex Ovechkin, Zoo PR," Gino says, giving Ovechkin the hairy eyeball.
"PR?" Sid says faintly. He didn't want attention. Well, other than Gino's attention. And what would Zoo PR want with him anyway?
"It's so nice to meet you,"
Ovechkin says, looking disproportionately gleeful. Sid hates it when people look that happy and he doesn't know why.
"When Zhenya comes to me and tells me all about nice school teacher who wants to volunteer, I think, oh, what a good opportunity for community outreach."
Sid can't actually find anything objectionable about that. Community ties are very important, and Sid believes strongly in leading by example. Even if it feels objectionable. But some squirming while Ovechkin stares at him like a present is a small price to pay for what's on offer here, and Sid would like to give back to the zoo any way he can, even if that means some personal embarrassment or discomfort.
"So, I think to myself, Alex, do not let this go to waste. We would like to write an article. Put it on the zoo blog. This is okay with you?"
Ovechkin asks. Yeah?" Sid says. He's sure it'll be good for plenty of teasing from Flower, but the prospect of this kind of access to the zoo, to Gino, is irresistible. Ovechkin beams at him.
"Wonderful! Zhenya will be so happy,"
Ovechkin says, turning his disconcerting beam at Gino.
"Take picture now," Gino says firmly.
Ovechkin, in fact, takes several.
"Yes, okay for ID picture," he says. "I will come later, take picture of you guys with penguins, bring you finished ID card."
"Yes, fine,"
Gino says, and then hustles Sid out with a hand hovering near his back. "Sorry," Sid says on their way to the aquarium. "I didn't want to take up your time like that. I know there must be a lot to do."
"It's okay,"
Gino says, that boyish smile crooking his lips again.
"Work goes quick with two people. And the penguins happy to see you. Happy penguins make less trouble."
"What kind of trouble could penguins make?"
Gino shakes his head, still smiling. "You find out." "You play hockey?"
Gino asks, while Sidney's sitting in his office, pulling on borrowed boots again. "Huh?" Sid asks, a little confused, until he follows Gino's line of sight and realizes Gino's nodding his head towards Sid's t-shirt.
Oh, sort of. I did it as a kid, through high school. My dad was a goalie. Did pretty okay for himself. I love it. It's just not..."
Sid pauses, trying to think of how to explain it when sometimes he's not sure himself. When he told his coach in high school that he was going to go to university for education, that student teaching was going to take up his time, not conditioning, his coach just shook his head and sighed. "I love teaching.
It's the greatest feeling in the world, watching those kids grow up, encouraging their curiosity, helping them learn. He glances over at Gino, who is watching him intently. I still play in a rec league. I'm not missing out on anything.
Follow heart is good, Gino agrees.
And then he pokes his tongue out a little.
I play too. Pickup game, when free.
Only pickup? Sid asks, feeling his heart beat a little faster.
Do you want to... We can always use more guys on the team, you know, if you wanted to.
He swallows.
If it worked out with your schedule, or whatever.
Gino offers Sid a hand up, and Sid takes it, and he can't help but shiver a little at how warm and big Gino's hand is around his. And Gino holds on as he says,
You... I give you my number. You text me. Schedule.
Yeah. Sid agrees instantly. He pulls out the flip phone he bought when he first came to Pittsburgh, and Gino's nose wrinkles a little, and he huffs out a laugh.
What? It still works, Sid says. But he doesn't get his back up over it the way he does when Flower rags on him, mostly because Gino looks so sweetly amused.
Maybe you call me if phone can't text,
Gino says, his tongue poking out again while he smiles.
Shut up and give me your number,
Sid advises him, and dares to hip-check him gently. Gino tells him, looking over his shoulder to make sure Sid puts it in his phone right.
You text me whenever, Gino says, nearly in his ear. But now you meet Hugo.
After Ovechkin, Sid has no idea what to expect from Hugo, whoever he is. But Hugo is distinctly less unnerving than Ovechkin, given that he's not even as tall as Sidney's knee. Hugo is a Gen 2 penguin, like some of the ones they were with yesterday, the rest being macaroni penguins and king penguins. The king penguins look like tiny emperor penguins, making them easy to identify, and all Gen 2s, Hugo included, have a white stripe across their heads instead of the yellowish plumage of the macaronis, which Gino tries to explain with a terribly endearing wiggle of his fingers over his forehead.
Hugo stay with us right now. See on foot, he get cut. Cut get infection. So we keep him away from other penguins until he feel better. Take care of foot.
He picks Hugo up off the floor and puts him on a stainless steel table.
Here, you help.
What do I do? Sid asks nervously, after putting on gloves.
We clean foot, change bandage, Gino says. Easy.
He clucks his tongue at Hugo, who trills back.
Hugo is a little wriggly.
Gino instructs Sid on how to hold him gently while he shows Sid how he removes the bandage, uses some Q-tips to clean the cut, and easily wraps Hugo's foot up again, no problem. Sid has a sneaking suspicion that Gino makes it look much easier than it actually is.
He have sore spot other foot. Want to treat just like this. Stop from becoming bumblefoot,
Gino says, pointing out something on Hugo's other foot that looks sort of like a blister. Sid nods automatically, agreeing with taking preventative measures, when what Gino said really registers.
Bumblefoot? Sid asks incredulously.
Gino shrugs, but he smiles ruefully, like he knows how silly it sounds.
Even penguin problem have cute name.
Sid shakes his head, but lets Gino prop Hugo up on his lap instead, which seems much easier than what Sid was doing. Sid crouches, and it's surprisingly easy to copy Gino's technique, and it's a matter of moments until Hugo's other foot is wrapped more or less identically to the first. Gino puts Hugo down carefully on the floor, and Hugo tips his head back and trills at Sid, his tail wiggling so hard that it practically wiggles his whole body. Gino laughs.
See? He happy. You'll be like pro soon. All penguins love you.
Hugo wiggles his tail again, and Sid reaches down to touch his head carefully. And Gino says,
Sid, watch this.
Sid takes his hand away, but Gino just crouches down and touches Hugo's chest. And then...
Oh, God. Gino is tickling Hugo, a hilarious burble of noise spilling from Hugo while he flaps his wings. Sid can't help but laugh because it's ridiculous and wonderful. And when he meets Gino's eyes, he thinks,
There's no place he'd rather be. Sid knows firsthand how expensive food is at places like the zoo. So he'd thought ahead and packed some sandwiches and a thermos full of soup. He'd brought enough to share as thanks, carefully assembled turkey sandwiches, and the potato soup that's the only thing Sid knows how to make from scratch. It's about the extent of Sid's culinary skills without a grill, but it's hearty and warm, and Sid knows it's good. So he feels confident offering, saying, "Hey, I don't know if you had plans or brought lunch, but I brought extra sandwiches and soup in case you hadn't." Gino's smile is shyly pleased, and Sid can feel his cheeks heat just a little.
"No plans. If you sure have enough," he checks.
"Hey, wasn't that your lunch, G? I had to stop Cookie from stealing it out of the fridge," says one of the other keepers as he walks through.
"Ridiculous, no," Gino says, shaking his head. "Stop taking shortcuts through here, Nilsy. Lazy."
Sid finds himself ducking to hide a smile. He's disproportionately pleased by the idea that Gino picked his lunch over Gino's own.
"Are you sure?" Sid asks. "Happy to share," Gino says emphatically. "Sid saving me from old borscht."
It's March, but still chilly, still good soup weather. Gino leads them back to his office, pulling off his boots and leaving them on the mat beside the door, and Sidney follows suit. His bag with the lunch he'd packed is still under the guest chair wedged next to Gino's desk, so he hauls it out and pulls out the thermos and insulated lunch bag. They're blue, with little moose on them, which might be Flower's idea of a joke.
"Cute,"
Gino says, waggling his eyebrows, and Sid feels his ears go red. Gino unearths two clean mugs and spoons from somewhere in his overflowing but still somehow tidy workspace, and Sid reminds himself that his soup is good. Everyone on the team says so, and there's no reason to be nervous. He finds himself looking down at Gino's striped socks to avoid watching his face, and then sneaks a look anyway. Gino catches him in the act just before he puts a spoonful in his mouth, and he flashes Sid a smile before tasting. And then he makes a surprised, happy noise and goes for a second spoonful right away.
"Good,"
Gino says, surprised, but not in an unkind way.
"Where did you buy?"
"Oh, I made it," Sid says, fiddling with his spoon.
"Sid, impressive,"
Gino says, taking another bite with unforced enthusiasm.
"So, hockey, teacher, cooking, other secret skill?"
"I'm not really good at cooking. This is my mom's recipe. It's the only thing I can make, Sid confesses. The smile Gino gives Sid is the most inviting thing Sid's ever seen, and he can feel himself leaning in involuntarily.
"My mama teach me how to make her best food, old ration food, but does not turn out like this. Sid can actually make mother's recipe," Gino says.
"Well, I changed a few things," Sid says, which he's never told anyone, especially not his mother. He doesn't think his version is better, but he likes it with his own little twists, the little differences. He's always had his own way of doing things, the little rituals that make up his day. Wiping down his blackboard at the end of the day before the cleaning crew, top to bottom, left to right. Grading his papers with a blue Pentel fineliner because he'd always felt red was too judgmental. So he makes his soup the same way. The same brand of potatoes, the same size chunks, the exact proportion of milk to broth. Just a little different than his mother's. Flower calls him superstitious and anal, but Sid finds he works best with his routines and the feeling he gets when all the little things slot into place. And the smile on Gino's face right before he takes a bite feels like another little thing slotting into place. They're working their way through the sandwiches when Ovechkin purrs from the doorway.
"Oh, I hate to interrupt."
"Lies," Gino says around a bite.
"Favorite thing is to interrupt."
"Character defamation,"
Ovechkin insists, and his hand is creeping toward one of the neat triangles still sitting in front of Gino. Sid brought four sandwiches, just to be safe. Gino has already ploughed through two and had been eyeing a third speculatively, which is probably why he smacks Ovechkin's hand away.
"Ow," Ovechkin says.
and here I brought you a present.
He holds up an ID badge with Sid's name and picture.
Not fair trade. Sid's sandwich better than badge,
Gino says stubbornly.
Sid doesn't get in to give you sandwiches without this,
Ovechkin says, dangling it like a treat. Sid knows, or at least he thinks, that they're just messing with each other. But the threat of not being able to do this again is enough to have Sid thrust half his sandwich in Ovechkin's direction. Both Gino and Ovechkin go silent. Gino with a look of surprise, Ovechkin with a slightly sour expression, like Sid just ruined all his fun.
Eat your sandwich. And eat other one too, otherwise Zhenya eat it, get too much junk in his trunk.
Gino looks offended and snatches the profit ID card from Ovechkin's hand.
Don't make that face, Ovechkin scolds him. You don't want Mr. Crosby to go hungry, do you?
Gino freezes mid-reach for the last sandwich and looks at Sid.
No, I'm good, Sid says quickly. I ate a big breakfast, and I still have half, see?
Ovechkin looks at him like he knows just as well as Sid that Sid could stand to eat a second sandwich too, but is amused to let Sid get away with it. Gino eyes Sid anxiously, like this isn't just the last sandwich in the lunchbox, but takes it nonetheless.
I came to take pictures of you with penguins, not pictures of you eating,
Ovechkin says, sounding very put upon, but still entertained.
Oh, Sid says, remembering about the blog. Oh, right. Just a minute. We can...
Ovechkin lifts the camera around his neck and takes a picture of them right then, which promises to be extremely unflattering.
Take your time, eat your lunch. Hurrying is so bad for digestion.
So are you,
Gino says pointedly, and Sid tries very, very hard not to smile. Ovechkin sniffs.
I'll be back later. Be photogenic with penguins then. Well, Mr. Crosby anyway, Zhenya is hopeless.
Sid opens his mouth to, well, apparently to defend Gino's penguin-adjacent photogenic nature, but Ovechkin has already swept off and is retreating down the hallway, and Gino is staring at him. Sid wonders if he has something on his face.
What? He says finally. Will be good pictures, you and penguins, Gino says.
Oh, I'm not worried, Sid says, before he realizes what that sounds like.
No, I mean, not because I think I'm photogenic, I mean because the penguins and you, I...
Sid breaks off weakly because Gino is grinning at him like he's enjoying watching Sid dig himself deeper.
Oh, shut up, Sid says, and tosses his balled-up napkin at Gino.
No, I like. Tell more about how I make photos good. But I've been on blog before. People bored need new, exciting face to save Ovechkin job.
Sid tries to tell himself he's not going to immediately Google that when he gets home, but he's already mentally composing the search terms.
Well, if it's to save his job, Sid says, making a show of his reluctance.
You worry?
Of course, Sid says. If not for him, I couldn't keep coming to see the penguins.
Now he must have job forever,
Gino says sadly, before he grins again.
Come, penguin's hungry too.
Can't have that, Sid says, and allows Gino to give him a hand up.
Zoo field trip, huh?
Flower says the next day.
Yeah,
Sydney says absently, and corrects a spirited but ultimately incorrect effort at spelling banana.
Your field trip is pretty tall, and Russian. You didn't mention that part.
What?
Flower turns his iPad to face Sydney. It's the zoo blog, and sure enough, there's a new post up as of this morning, with a picture of Sid, Gino, and Hugo.
I am very sad you didn't name the baby after me.
I'm going to name our baby after you.
You are not. You're going to name it something French after a saint, and anyway, you don't have a baby yet.
I'm trying my best. Like so many times this weekend, I tried.
Oh, please stop telling me. I like Vero a lot and don't want to think about you guys doing stuff.
Flower continues mercilessly.
Oh, man. Like some crazy positions very read in a magazine. Whatever works, you know.
Sid wishes very much for death or for Flower to stop talking to him.
Maybe you want to borrow the magazine? Flower says, looking speculative.
I am not making babies, Sid hisses, just as the headmaster walks into the teacher's lounge.
Mario looks at them both, but he seems relatively unfazed. Then again, Mario Lemieux has seen and heard a lot weirder. He used to employ Max Talbot, after all, and Sid and Flower are basically never going to be able to match that level of verbal incontinence. The blog picture is still up on the iPad, and Sid can't resist one more glance while Flower is distracted. The picture doesn't quite capture all of Hugo's cuteness with his tail feather shaking and his happy waddle. Sid in the picture is smiling widely at Hugo, and Sid is struck that he looks joyful. Gino is not looking at Hugo, though. His head is tilted down, but his eyes are fixed on Sid. The camera can't be doing him justice either, because Sid doesn't remember Gino looking at him like that. Like the most amazing, wonderful thing in front of him wasn't the penguin. No matter what Flower says, his phone is fully functioning and perfectly capable of receiving texts. Just not mass texts, which is fine. Humans existed for a long time without mass texting. Which means he gets the text Gino sends him.
I called you an hour, just in case your phone not text after all.
This is followed by a row of just parentheses. Sid doesn't know what all the parentheses mean without the colon, but he's hoping they're happy. He also actually debates whether or not to pretend he didn't notice the text so Gino will call him, which is embarrassing. But in the end, some vague sense of pride makes him send one back. Call me anyway. Because even though he can text with his phone, he has no desire to. The phone starts ringing a gratifyingly short amount of time later. Like maybe Gino was waiting, phone in hand.
So, phone work?
Gino says right off the bat, sounding disproportionately amused. Which is fair, maybe, because Sid's grinning so hard his cheeks hurt. I told you, Sid says, trying to sound long-suffering. He fails pretty badly at it.
You say about hockey this weekend. Still offer, yes?
Yes, absolutely, Sid says. Because somewhere in between being forced to hear about his best friend's sex life and teaching 7-year-olds, he got team permission to bring Gino in. It's this Thursday night. That's our normal night, but we can reschedule if the team needs it. I mean, it's really flexible. Thursday's okay?
Thursday fine. You email me address?
Oh, for sure. Let me get a pen, Sid says, rummaging under the pile of worksheets about hibernation. What's your email address? Gino gives him a Gmail address instead of his official zoo email, and Sid makes sure to write it neatly and clearly on one of his students' worksheets. Crap!
Sid?
And Sid realizes he swore out loud. No, sorry, I accidentally wrote it down next to Ethan's explanation of soil. Sid sighs, staring at the bright blue ink. Gino laughs.
I not know anything about it. Make sure he not email me. Hope to learn more about dirt.
Sid laughs, if ruefully. Whiteout was invented for a reason, right?
Yes. Make sure you copy address down safe first, so not give you again.
I'll put it on a post-it note up on the fridge.
Good. Don't lose.
Sid can't help but think about the picture. About Gino looking warm and happy and focused, and he feels warm down to the tips of his toes. I won't, Sid promises.
Students good? When you not write all over homework, I mean.
Ha ha, Sid says, trying to will the pink out of his cheeks. They're a handful, but they're good. They have a book report due tomorrow. I had to be suitably intimidating to make sure they'd remember.
Oh, can't imagine. Have to show me scary face on Thursday.
I won't show it to you. You're on my team.
And you don't have to make face if you want me to do something.
Sid's mind is racing ahead to hockey plays and saucer passes on the ice. What do I have to do then?
Just say.
Oh, Sid says, feeling dumbfounded. And there's a long pause before he licks his lips and says, Well, I'm pretty bossy on the ice, so don't worry, I'll tell you when I want something.
We'll be listening,
Gino promises. Flower is there when Sid gets there, but then Flower is always at the rink first. He's a little pink-cheeked, which means he's already warmed up, and he's got his pants and skates on. Hey, Sid says, taking the spot on the bench next to him, but still leaving plenty of room. Flower's got more equipment than anyone and needs space to do his thing. Flower undoes the toe ties of his pads from the loose double loop he ties them in when he's not playing, then threads them through his skates. Before putting his knees down in the pads' cradles, he says, And where is your field trip? Stop calling him that, Sid says, mortified. He's coming. Flower clucks his tongue. He velcros his knees in before he twists to start methodically buckling up the straps around his legs. He didn't even pick you up? Terrible. It's not like that, Sid protests weakly. Just admit that you want to take a ride on his disco stick. Sid groans. Why are we friends? Flower rights himself, then drops into butterfly a few times, and apparently satisfied, he turns and fixes Sid with a look. Because people need people, he says, gently but firmly. Also, I put up with all your garbage French when we first met, and if that's not BFFs, then I don't know what is. My French isn't garbage, Sid says automatically, prepared to sulk. Well, not anymore, but I've put more work into you than my car, Flower says. Cheer up. Maybe your field trip will be into it. French is the language of love, after all. French is the language of assholes, Sid mutters. Flower grins and proceeds to use the language of assholes to enumerate how wrong Sid is about French specifically and also life in general, with a few pointed observations about the size of his behind. The other guys start to trickle in, and Sid looks up every time the door opens, and then it opens cautiously, and it's Gino. He glances over the locker room, and his face lights up when he sees Sid.
Sid, hi.
Flower, that traitor, gets up and says, I'm going to see if the Zamboni is done. Which is stupid. Sid can hear it still. Obviously it's not off the ice yet. Flower waves Gino towards his spot on the bench before collecting his stick and waddling out the door. Gino sets his bag down on the floor, and Sid belatedly remembers to say, Hi, Gino.
Late?
Oh, no, Sid says, but Gino is already stepping into his jock and pulling on his pants with the ease of long practice. If the high school team doesn't have a game, sometimes we can get on the ice a few minutes early. He's broken out of watching Gino lace his skates by Duper clearing his throat.
Going to introduce us, Sid?
Yeah, Sid says hurriedly. Everyone, this is Gino. He works at the zoo.
Field trip,
Duper says to Tanger. And Sid is seriously going to kill Flower. There's a round of introductions, and then Sid can't hear the Zamboni anymore, so he stands and gets his stick and their bag of pucks and heads out, aware of Gino close behind him. Gino's got some moves, there's no doubt about it.
They do a couple of shooting drills, and it's plain to see that Gino is good at this, that he loves this. They have a good, solid practice, and there's a pleasant burn in Sid's muscles by the end. But what he likes best is Gino's bark of laughter when Flower stones him cold, and the smile on his face when he says to Sid,
I get next one, you see.
Like hell you will, Flower retorts.
Friday seems unusually long, and Sid doesn't like to think that it's because it's the only thing standing between him and more time with Gino. He'd rather blame the fire drill and the unexpected meltdown of two of his favourite students that had involved an unpleasant trip to Mario's office and parents being called. But he can't deny the boneless slump into his bed feels all the better for knowing that when he wakes up, he'll go for a quick run and then to the zoo. He's setting his alarm when his phone buzzes in his hand, and his heart absolutely doesn't do anything funny when he sees who it's from.
Tomorrow, not bring lunch. I treat.
Sid has immediate and opposing thoughts about that, which are both completely overwhelmed in a rush of warm-cheeked, unthinking pleasure.
You really don't have to, Sid sends back in the end, because his mother would insist, even if she'd also tell him to accept gifts graciously.
My turn to cook,
Gino replies, quickly enough that Sid absolutely knows Gino was waiting. It makes him type even faster.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
The moment he sends it, he starts worrying that it sounds cold, unappreciative. But before he can work himself up into restlessness, there's another message. Sid impatiently presses the button, stupidly nervous.
Good. I want you to like, Gino writes.
And Sid is staring at a blank text message, trying to think of a not-weird way to say that anything Gino makes Sid will like, when the new message screen with its irritating animated opening envelope appears again. Sid blinks, pressing the shallow, small key too hard, curious.
Have to keep you coming.
He absolutely knows that Gino means he wants Sid to keep coming to the zoo. He knows this, but he's still biting his lip on a startled, affirmative noise. Dressed just in his boxes, warm and loose between his sheets, the message has an entirely different context and meaning, and Sid feels heat gathering tightly in his stomach. His body feels hypersensitive, the slide of the sheets against his skin as he squirms, just a little, is suddenly delicious, a totally innocent stretch turned guilty. Guiltier still, Sid realizes Gino is waiting for a response, and nothing he's thinking is remotely appropriate.
Don't think I could stop myself, Sid sends,
completely horrified at himself the moment he pushes send. He reads it again and again, alternately convincing himself that it's totally innocent and totally filthy. He knows that Gino has no idea of the way he's flushed all over, the way his breathing has gone shallow and quick, part panic, part helpless arousal. You have one new message, pops up, the bright screen illuminating the room. Sid's breath catches in his throat, his chest tight with anticipation and fear.
Whenever you want, you should come. I make happen.
Sid actually groans out loud, burying his face in his pillow. He's sure it's just Gino fumbling with a foreign language, but just the same, he can't help sliding one hand into his boxes, and he thinks of Gino saying things to him in that low voice, thinks of Gino murmuring,
whenever you want, you should come.
Thinks of Gino making it happen, wrapped tight around Sid, and jerking him off, slow and teasing,
until Sid just can't. Until Gino says, "Now, Sid." And Sid comes. All over his stomach and his boxes. And he still has his phone clenched tight in his other hand. He wonders briefly if this counts as sexting and resolves never to ask anyone, especially not Flower. Sid can't stop his fingers from drumming on the steering wheel the entire drive to the zoo. He's feeling pretty justifiably anxious, but he keeps glancing at the badge on the passenger seat at stoplights and forces himself to calm down. He might not be able to curb his growing attraction to Gino, but he's an adult. He can manage to act like it. The person in the ticket booth waves him in easily, Sid flashing the badge at him with a casualness he definitely is not feeling. He glances in the exhibit, partly to see if Gino is there, and partly just to check in, taking a moment to watch the penguins happily absorbed in their tasks. Swimming, preening, dozing. But it's just the penguins, so Sid uses the key Gino gave him to open the employees-only door and heads down the hall to find Gino at one of the stainless steel tables, looking down at something. "Hi," Sid calls, and then winces when it seems like his voice echoes on the walls. Gino turns, and there's no other word for it. He beams.
"Sid, yes, good, good time," he says in a rush,
and Sid smiles back automatically.
"Why is it a good time?" Sid asks.
Gino's smile turns a little shy, but he doesn't look away.
"Always good when you come," he says.
And that's a little... It makes Sid think of last night, and then he can feel his face going red, and he wonders if Gino can tell that he... Well...
"But good news also," Gino says, face lighting up again. "How to say is long story."
Gino trails off, seemingly talking mostly to himself. He frowns thoughtfully before grinning at Sid.
"Office," Gino says,
cupping a hand around Sid's elbow to draw him down the hallway. It really doesn't help Sid's blush. As soon as they're both in the room, though, Gino lets go, turning to his bookshelves. Sid figures that there's something technical Gino wants to explain, and he needs a textbook or manual or something to make sure Sid understands. So he's surprised when what Gino pulls off the shelf looks suspiciously like a picture book.
"You know this book?"
Gino asks, placing it in his hands. And Sid glances down at it, and of course he does. And Tango Makes Three is one of his favourite children's books, the quizzical beak smiles of Roy, Silo, and Tango perfectly familiar.
"Yes, I have it," Sid starts, only to break off in surprise, because there are nesting penguins in the room next door, and Gino is handing him this book to explain what his good news is,
and Sid's hands are shaking a little with what he thinks that might mean.
"Gino, do you... are you?"
It's hardly a question, but Gino seems to understand him anyway, opening the book to a familiar page. He found an egg that needed to be cared for, and he brought it to Roy and Silo's nest.
"Gino," Sid breathes out, his heart beating fast and feeling impossibly tight.
"Yes," Gino says, both reassuring and triumphant.
"I find an egg."
Gino shows Sid the email he wrote to his superiors at the zoo, telling them about a pair of male macaroni penguins named Paul and Bob who had mated with each other for 3 years running, with notes from his predecessor verifying it and his plan to give them an egg.
"Macaroni already have 2 egg, only hitch 1,
Gino reminds Sid, and Sid thinks back to that first day with the penguins, Gino explaining that most of the penguins wouldn't hatch their first egg.
"So you're going to take a first egg and give it to Paul and Bob," Sid confirms, needing to hear Gino say it. "Zoo give the okay this morning. I say, best case, we get new penguin. Worst case, still get penguin. They agree. Best odds," Gino says with a shrug.
"Show me?" Sid asks, still breathlessly excited, and Gino nods.
Yes, you meet Paul and Bob, Gino agrees.
Paul and Bob look just like the rest of the macaronis, mostly indistinguishable to Sid except for the identifying bands on their wings. Like the other pairs, they take turns fussing over a nest of rocks and grasses. Unlike the others, their nest is empty.
Come, Gino says, and holds out a hand to help Sid up a rocky, uneven part of the nesting habitat.
Look for egg tipped out of nest, still warm.
They carefully pick their way through, and Sid learns his lesson via displeased honking that getting too close to an occupied nest is not a good idea. He's elated to come across an egg, but when he touches it, it's stone cold. Gino wraps his large, warm hands around Sid's and the rejected egg.
It's okay, Gino says gently. We find one.
He takes it from Sid's grasp and puts it in his jacket pocket and squeezes Sid's hand again. It's another 10 minutes and another cold egg before Sid sees an egg on the lee side of a nest, definitely tipped out, but still covered by some loose grass. He calls softly for Gino, who comes over.
I don't know, Sid says hesitantly.
We check,
Gino says, and he leans down, and Sid braces himself. But a smile overtakes Gino's face, and he scoops the egg up.
Warm, still good,
he says, and cradles it in his hands. Sid bites his lip and touches it carefully with his fingertips. And Gino's right, it is still warm.
How do we... We have to keep it warm, right? Until we get to the nest?
Undershirt, next to skin, Gino advises.
And Sid very nearly freaks out when Gino hands him the egg, but does as Gino says, holding the egg carefully against his stomach. They make their way back down to Paul and Bob's nest, and then Sid detects another problem. Paul, or is it Bob, is sitting on the nest.
Now what? Sid asks under his breath.
Penguins easy to distract. Not full incubate yet. Still leave nest for fish. Sid wait for chance, then put in, yes?
Yes, Sid says, trying very hard to keep a lid on his panic.
Gino touches Sid's hand through his shirt where he's cradling the egg.
You take care of kids every day. Trust you.
That actually settles Sid down. He takes a deep breath and says,
okay.
Sure enough, Gino's offer of krill tempts both Paul and Bob off their nest, and Sid gently lays the egg in the middle, taking a minute to tuck it in with some of the loose grass that the penguins have lined their nest with. He meets Gino's eyes and gives him a thumbs up, and then they both retreat a little ways away, close enough to watch Paul and Bob return to their nest, but far enough away that no penguins are alarmed by their proximity. He thinks they're both holding their breath when Paul and Bob waddle back, and when Gino grabs Sid's hand and holds on tight, Sid squeezes his hand right back and watches anxiously. They notice the egg right away, having a hurried conversation of surprise-sounding squawks. It seems to go on forever, or at least long enough that he and Gino are probably breaking bones in each other's hands. They stop, but make no move to get back on the nest, and Sid can't breathe. But then they fluff out the grass a little more, move some rocks fussily, and one of them hops up and sits right on the egg.
Gino, Sid says, and his voice is trembling, but he can't help it.
Good, good, Gino tells him, sounding relieved and excited and just as emotional as Sid. Come, sit down inside.
Gino makes Sid sit down in his office before sitting down himself, then immediately getting up.
I make tea. Calm down. Stay,
he says, heading back toward the kitchen. Sid can sympathize. It feels like he's vibrating almost, just a tremor running through his body, thrumming in his chest. He knows it's just adrenaline, but it's still scary and exciting and overwhelming. He's grateful for the moment alone to compose himself. When Gino comes back in, carefully holding a pair of mugs, his smile feels a little less crazy, a little more normal. Gino puts one cup down on his desk, and the other he offers with the handle in Sid's direction.
Sid still feels a little shaky when he takes it. He blows on it, even though he should just wait for it to cool a bit, and Gino's gaze is fixed on him. It feels warmer than the steam rising from the tea. Sid takes a careful sip then, and the tea is strong and sweet, and he makes a surprised noise of appreciation. "Thanks," he remembers to say, and Gino shakes his head. And then they're just sitting together quietly, knees pressed close. "Can I ask you a question?" Sid says eventually.
"Always," Gino says.
Sid bites his lip.
"Can I... would you tell me... what made you decide to give Paul and Bob an egg?"
Gino looks at his mug for a moment, clearly thinking of how he wants to explain, and Sid reminds himself that he needs to be patient. He can't help but be a little overinvested in Gino's answer, though. He's very aware that if he's ever going to have a baby, someone is going to have to find him an egg, no matter what magazine's Flower tries to give him. So he knows exactly why he would give Paul and Bob an egg, but he can't help but want to know if Gino's reasons are anything like his. Gino finally just shrugs and looks up at Sid, and he looks sad and amused, and Sid's heart clenches.
"My nest empty too," he says.
And that's the moment Sid falls. Really falls. And he thinks that everything led to this, led to Gino. His inability to let Gino walk away when he was just a stranger with a bucket of fish meant Sid would end up right here, completely incapable of stopping himself from leaning in and kissing Gino. He doesn't question it, just knows it's absolutely right. And when Gino makes a surprised noise and kisses back, Sid scrambles to put his mug on Gino's desk, desperate to touch him, to keep him from going anywhere, maybe ever. Gino puts his own mug down and pulls Sid closer. And it's a little awkward because Gino's legs are so long, but his hands are big and warm where they're cupping Sid's face. And Gino gentles the kiss into something less desperate but infinitely more sweet, like he's determined to appreciate this moment, to appreciate Sid. His lips move softly against Sid's, the tender press of his lips like a flurry of promises that Sid can only echo back and hope Gino understands. He must, because Gino's kisses turn a little more insistent, and he slides one hand back to cup the nape of Sid's neck, his fingers slipping into the short curls there and making Sid shiver. He wants more of this, more of Gino, more of everything. And he leans closer, and it's not enough. And when Gino presses his tongue against Sid's lips and licks into his mouth, it's definitely not close enough. He whines a little in his throat, and then closes the distance between them, moving up and straddling Gino's lap. Gino's thighs are warm under him, strong and muscled, and Gino has one hand on the small of Sid's back, pulling him closer, and Sid gasps into Gino's mouth when he feels the hard line of Gino's cock against his inner thigh. He's lost all of the calm from earlier, and it just feels desperately important to kiss Gino until he can barely get a breath in, totally unwilling to stop. His hands sneak under the hem of Gino's shirt, resting against his stomach, and Gino is irresistibly warm under Sid's palms, breath stuttering with the stroking of Sid's fingertips. Gino tilts Sid's head and goes for the sensitive spot under his jaw, and then he can only gasp in Gino's ear and writhe on his lap, and Gino makes a low noise of appreciative interest and takes shameless advantage, pressing dirty, open-mouthed kisses there. And Sid can't help the grind of his hips down against Gino's thighs.
"Sid," Gino says against his skin, voice low and wrecked, and he murmurs something in Russian. And Sid doesn't know what it is, but he doesn't care, especially not with Gino's fingertips flirting under the waistband of his jeans, sliding up and down the small of his back.
"Sid," Gino says again.
"Have to stop."
"Yeah,"
Sid says mindlessly, dragging his hands further up Gino's chest. Gino groans and catches Sid by the shoulders.
Sid, we in office, Gino says. What if Ovechkin come by?
Sid groans, but for an entirely different reason.
Okay, no, Sid sighs,
because that's a life experience he never, ever wants to have. He's also incredibly unwilling to untangle himself from Gino, but he at least leans back, even if he's still sitting on Gino's lap. The expression on Gino's face suggests he's just as unhappy about this as Sid, though, which makes Sid feel warm all the way down to his toes, guiltily pleased. Gino reaches up with one hand and presses a thumb to Sid's lower lip.
Keep for later? You want later?
Yes, Sid says emphatically. Gino smiles at him, happy and just a little sly.
Maybe I send you work with Nielsie, not distract me.
I can be good, Sid argues. Gino's eyes go half-lidded, and he gives Sid a playful smack on the ass.
I can't. Up, Sid.
Sid reluctantly hauls himself out of Gino's lap, feeling easily more sexually frustrated than he's felt in years. When's later? He asks, completely unable to help himself.
I come get you? 5 o'clock. Take you to my house. Make dinner, yes? Gino suggests.
Yeah, Sid agrees, a little breathless, thinking about what Gino taking him home might involve.
Gino sighs. Already distracting, he says, smiling, like he doesn't really mind. Come, you meet Fish. You will like Lizzie.
Not as much as I like you, Sid says.
Of course not. Fish and Lazy ugly, Gino says,
sticking out his tongue a little. And that nearly derails them from leaving Gino's office. James Neal has an odd look on his face when Gino hands Sid over to him for the afternoon, but he goes with it and gives Sid simple things to do, and Sid actually gets caught up in it until Gino is back, already in his jacket and holding Sid's in his arms.
You know, Sid, you're welcome back any time, Nielsie says, before shooting an amused look at Gino. Thanks for your help. I'd try to steal you away from Gino, but I think he'd sick the penguins on me.
Gino hands Sid his jacket and points a finger at Nielsie.
Find own volunteer. I'm not sharing, Gino says firmly.
Sid just smiles dopily. Nielsie holds up his hands as if to say no harm meant. Gino eyeballs him a little, before drawing Sid away, a hand at the small of his back to guide him out. Sid resists the urge to shiver, remembering Gino's hand there earlier, thinking about the prospect of an entire evening alone with Gino.
I'll walk to zoo, usually, Gino says on the way out. Other guy, he go to San Diego for a year, help zoo there, so I rent.
Oh, Sid says, and then bites his lip in thought.
I could drive us there.
He doesn't know why he feels so hesitant about this. It's completely practical. But then again, he's driving Gino home. He sat on Gino's lap earlier today, and then Gino promised him later. And he feels his ears go red. He nearly jumps when Gino strokes a fingertip along his ear, and when Sid looks up, Gino has a knowing smile on his face.
You drive. Get us home faster.
Sid is only too eager to comply. It really is close, all of 10 minutes, and then Sid is pulling in front of a nice little place with a porch, a few daffodils growing up around the front steps.
Oh, Gino says, as if something is just occurring to him. Are you okay with dogs?
Sid blinks. I like them, he says, the words coming out like a question because he's not sure what that has to do with anything.
Good. Jeffrey like you, Gino says, shrugging, leading Sid up the steps.
Jeffrey is a 100-something-pound dog de Bordeaux who, as Gino anticipated, likes Sid. A lot. He's almost bowled over as Jeffrey enthusiastically sniffs his shoes, peers up at him, and nudges at Sid's hip with his head, Jeffrey herding Sid into the house just as effectively as Gino. Gino says something firmly in what Sid assumes is Russian, and Jeffrey obediently lies down on the floor just inside the kitchen, but makes eyes at them both. Gino snorts.
You think if you're cute enough, you get steak.
Not cute enough for that, Sid hazards. Gino gives him a small, secretive smile.
You cute enough.
Sid doesn't know what to say to that, but he does dare to go up on his toes and press a kiss to Gino's mouth. And then another. And then Gino was wrapping his arms around Sid's waist and making a noise of pleased interest before he kisses Sid a little more, then pulling back decisively.
Dinner, Gino says. Too much distract.
Sid licks his lips, and Gino watches him do it. Right. Dinner first.
Dessert after,
Gino says, eyes dark and focused intently on him.
Can I help?
Sid says. Gino looks momentarily conflicted, but then says,
Make salad? I cook steak.
Deal, Sid says, grateful to have something to do besides look at Gino and want. The kitchen is small, but not cramped, and it's easy enough to follow Gino's directions, finding the big mixing bowl, rinsing the lettuce while Gino seasons the steak and puts it in the pan. It's kind of fun, the two of them bumping hips and Gino reaching around him for tongs and filching a piece of carrot off the cutting board. It keeps him close, and Sid keeps looking up from chopping vegetables to find Gino's eyes on him, the same intent look, making Sid a little clumsier than usual, forcing him to redirect his attention to his task. He really doesn't want this night to end in the emergency room. Of course, he's done before Gino is, and when Gino firmly insists that the steaks need to rest for a minute or two before he slices them, he's left with the same problem he had before. Idle, too willing hands.
Dinner working on itself, Gino says,
a little sly smile quirking his lips, and Sid doesn't need any more invitation than that. Gino beckons him over, leaning against the counter, drawing Sid close. And Sid's not sure how he ends up being the one with his back to the refrigerator, but he's certainly not complaining as Gino kisses him breathless. If it weren't wasteful and ungrateful, Sid would be inclined to say they could forget about dinner altogether. But Gino evidently has different plans. Truthfully, Sid regrets that steak takes so long to chew, because Gino keeps looking at him like that, and he shifts a little in his chair, hopes he isn't too flushed in the cheeks while they work their way through dinner. Then Gino is taking their plates, and it's like some sort of sign to Jeffrey, who is up off the floor and bolting for the front door. What? Sid says, mystified.
Walk time.
Mind? Gino says. Jeffrey is watching them both from the front doorway, pacing back and forth anxiously and nosing at a leash hanging from a coat hook on the wall. Fine by me, Sid says, because if he were able to say no to animals, he probably never would have met Gino in the first place. The Highland Park neighborhood is nice. Little single-family homes and sidewalks that see a fair amount of use. Spring is close, but it's still chilly and a little windy, enough so that Sid walks close to Gino for completely legitimate reasons, namely Gino's ability to serve as a windbreak. Jeffrey's leash is wrapped securely a few times around one of Gino's hands, and with the other, he takes Sid's hand and makes a disapproving noise. Oof, cold, Gino says, and brings Sid's hand up to kiss the back of his fingers, which does nothing for the temperature of his skin, but warms him just the same. They aren't out so very long. Enough for Jeffrey to stretch his big legs and bark at the squirrels in a nearby park, and mark a few things that Jeffrey doubtless considers his. And Gino holds Sid's hand the whole time, long fingers wrapped around his palm, and tells Sid about how he brought Jeffrey with him from Russia, because he couldn't bear to leave him behind.
Me? Two suitcases, Most huge dog, Gino says with a laugh. Airport taxi, all scared, except one. Tough lady. She say, I sit in front, only dog fit in back.
Sid grins at the thought. When I came, I brought two big suitcases too, and a hockey bag.
That I ship, not enough hands, Gino says, and squeezes Sid's hand in his.
They're back at the house, and Jeffrey bounds in the door, drawing Gino in with him. So Sid, taking the rear, shuts the door, only to find Gino at a standstill as Jeffrey shakes himself out, free of the leash. They bump into each other, pressed close with Sid's back to the door. Jeffrey pads away, tags clinking, but he and Gino are still frozen in the doorway. All the ease of earlier seems to have fled them, and Sid clears his throat, not sure what to do.
It's getting late. Maybe I should...
You want to go?
Gino asks, and he looks crestfallen.
It's okay if you not want to stay.
No,
it's fine.
I just thought maybe
you didn't want to. They stop and look at each other, then reach out at the same time, and Gino kisses Sid like he's dying for it, pinning him against the door.
Told you, dessert, Gino says, nipping quick little bites down Sid's throat.
Yes, Sid gasps, please. Gino kisses his mouth again, greedy and playful, and his hands are just the same, reaching down to grab Sid's ass and pull him flush.
Sid, Gino says, after breaking the kiss, panting a little against Sid's lips.
You won't? If not, is okay, can still... at zoo.
It takes Sid a few seconds to decipher that through his kiss-hazed brain, but once he's got it, he's not going to risk any misunderstanding.
Gino, he murmurs, and God, his voice has gone deep and a little rough. Take me to bed.
Gino's eyes are half-lidded, and his own voice is nearly hoarse when he says,
Yes.
And then he pulls away and nudges Sid up the stairs to a small bedroom. They kick off their shoes on the way in, but there isn't even a moment for awkwardness, because Gino is backing him up to the bed, and it's the easiest thing to fall back and pull Gino with him. Gino gets one knee between Sid's thighs and his tongue in Sid's mouth, and then there are just way too many clothes in the way. Sid's busy trying to suck on Gino's tongue and pull off his shirt at the same time with extremely limited success. Gino rears back and pulls his shirt over his head, and Sid stares because, well, that's a lot of Gino, and Sid gets to look all he wants, and he does want. Gino's fingers go to the hem of Sid's t-shirt, another high school hockey team relic, which... okay, is maybe a little too tight on him now, but Sid can honestly say it was the most appropriate clothing choice for the day for a variety of reasons, and only one of those was wondering if Gino might notice. It's already a little rucked up over his stomach, and Gino's fingers skim over his abs, and then Sid can't take it anymore and has to pull it off himself. Gino strokes his hands down over Sid's ribs, coming to rest near his hips, thumbs dipping below Sid's belt. And then he's leaning down again to kiss Sid's collarbone, hands slipping together to tug at the waistband of Sid's jeans as he keeps kissing down Sid's chest, right down his sternum in a straight line south. Sid can't stop the breath he sucks in as Gino undoes his belt, popping the button easily, pulling down the zip as he lays wet, open-mouthed kisses on Sid's stomach, trailing lower and lower until he gets to the elastic of Sid's boxer briefs. The pressure of his closed fly was enough to distract Sid, but now there's hardly a layer of fabric between Gino's mouth and his cock, straining up against the material.
Good?
Gino asks, and a disbelieving noise slips out of Sid's mouth. Yes, Sid says, as clearly as he can.
Good. Stop me if not like, Gino tells him,
and Sid barely has time to look at him incredulously before Gino is pulling back to tug Sid's jeans down his hips, and his head thunks back against the pillow, groaning at the sight of Gino looking at him hungrily.
"I'm pretty sure that won't be necessary," Sid pants out, as Gino tucks his fingers into the waist of Sid's boxes, thumbs running firmly down the line of his hip bones.
Gino shifts to facilitate pulling Sid's boxes and jeans down in one long shove until Sid can kick them free. Gino stands to skin out of his pants and underwear too, and then he's right back, surging up to kiss Sid hard. They're still kissing, deep and messy and so good, when Gino fumbles to the side for the nightstand drawer, and he doesn't even stop sucking on Sid's lower lip while he does it, just keeps kissing him. And then Gino is pulling away again. But this time, the trail of kisses he leaves down Sid's chest are hurried and eager with the occasionally delicious sting of teeth. And it's not like Sid is celibate. He just doesn't have time to date. And, oh God. Oh. Gino looks up from where he's just licked Sid from base to tip.
"Loud, okay," he says.
Well, that's good news, because Sid thinks he just made a noise high in his throat, and he's bound to make more before Gino is through. And he's right, because he sighs when Gino wraps his lips around the head of Sid's cock and takes him in, and he's just doing his part for international communication when he moans as Gino does something fantastic with his tongue, squeezing the base of Sid's cock with one hand while his lips and tongue work the top. When Sid looks down and sees Gino's generous lips stretched around his cock and the heated look in his eyes, he can only groan, "Oh, fuck," and watch Gino's eyes go darker still. Gino's just setting up a nice rhythm, slow and wet, and like he could blow Sid forever given the opportunity, when Sid hears the familiar noise of a cap being popped off. Gino is tracing his fingertips up Sid's thigh, and he pulls off to say, his voice rough, "You like?" Sid makes a kind of embarrassing, breathy noise before he manages to say, "Yes, God, yes," trying to unclench his fingers from their death grip on the sheets. Gino grins up at him, filthy and pleased, and says,
"I'm just getting started."
Sid watches him lube up two of his fingers, long and clever looking, and tries to breathe deeply. It's been a while. Sid loves fingering himself, but he'd forgotten how much better it is when someone else does it. And Gino leaves him gasping, mouth opening and closing as he wraps his other hand back around the base of Sid's cock and goes back to sucking him off. He doesn't break stride, effortlessly working his fingers in tandem with his mouth, and Sid is pretty sure Gino's neighbours can hear him because he's basically losing it, letting out helpless cries when Gino crooks his fingers up, tongue swirling just under the head of Sid's cock. "Gino, Gino," Sid whines, trying to warn him that he's going to come at the slightest provocation, and Gino just hums eagerly like he wants it as much as Sid does. And that's all it takes for Sid, back actually bowing off the bed with the force of his orgasm. He's just absolutely wrecked. Somewhere in the back of his mind, he desperately wants to get Gino off, wants to return the favour and more, but his body simply refuses to move. He does manage to open his eyes, blinking at Gino in a daze, and Gino is just watching him so intently. Sid reaches for him weakly, says, "Gino, you, come here." Gino slides up the bed, and he leans down on his elbows and just, he doesn't give Sid a kiss so much as take it, and Sid can taste himself in Gino's mouth, feel Gino's cock against his thigh. And when Gino breaks for air, Sid says, "You made a mess of me." And it comes out appreciative instead of chiding. Gino sits up a little to admire his handiwork.
"Yes," he says,
sounding simultaneously satisfied and still hungry. Sid stretches a little, maybe showing off just a bit, because he is a mess. His thighs are slick with sweat and lube, and there's a few drops of cum near the crease of his thigh, and his skin is red with what may later turn out to be some spectacular love bites. I think you missed a spot, Sid tells him, running a hand over his stomach. Gino gives him a look so intensely hot that Sid actually squirms a little.
I fix, Gino promises,
bending back down to kiss Sid, deep and perfect, sliding his hand over Sid's stomach to rest on top of Sid's hand. He makes a pleased noise, like he's content with how Sid's been kissed breathless again, before he leans just far enough back to get a hand on his own dick, basically sitting on Sid's thighs. Sid has to bite his lip, watching Gino get himself off right there, the sting grounding him from where his cock is desperately trying to get hard again with no success. But it's helplessly arousing. Gino's eyes fixed on him, his other hand still braced on Sid's, knitting their fingers together. Gino, come on, Sid says, squeezing Gino's fingers. I want it. Gino groans, eyes sliding shut for a moment, his hand falling out of rhythm for a moment before speeding up. Sid, he says, and it sounds desperate, a moment from falling apart, like he just needs something to tip him over the edge. And Sid wants him to come, so he just says, please. Gino comes, loud and messy, all over Sid. Gino collapses next to Sid, one arm slung over Sid's chest. And Sid's not always into having people plastered against him during the afterglow. But there's something really nice about this. The room is chilly, and Gino is pleasantly warm against his side. After a few minutes, Gino turns so he's lying on his side and draws Sid closer still, tangling them up together. Then Gino laughs a little to himself and pulls away just long enough to grab a tissue from the bedside table, where he tries pretty fruitlessly to mop up Sid's stomach. Sid laughs too, because first of all, Gino looks both vaguely apologetic and a little smug, and also, Sid's just a little ticklish. Good enough, Sid says, and pulls Gino close again.
You say make mess, Gino says, as if to remind him. I remember, Sid says dryly, and wonders how often he's going to call up that particular memory on cold nights.
I liked it. Gino hums a pleased noise against Sid's hair. His fingertips are trailing gently back and forth on Sid's shoulder. I like you, Sid dares to add, albeit more quietly.
I like you when I first read your letter. You draw little penguin next to your name. Say nice things about kids learn so much on special day with penguins.
Sid was probably still flushed from orgasm, but he feels his face heat up further. They did. That's why I came that day I first ran into you. I was, planning the next field trip. Gino looks at Sid curiously.
Letter old. You know your way at zoo. When I realize you are Mr. Crosby, I wonder why you keep coming to plan field trip,
Gino says, leaning over, the better to watch Sid's face go even redder.
Made me think maybe you have other reason for coming to zoo?
I was coming for the penguins, Sid tries, aiming for innocent, but Gino just laughs.
You think I ask anybody I see twice nearly drop fish on to come help with penguins?
Gino asks, teasing.
I like you before I even meet you. Good sense about people.
Gino punctuates this with a self-congratulatory peck to Sid's lips.
Flower made so much fun of me, Sid confesses. He knew I kept going to the zoo to see you.
Gino smiles, uncomplicatedly happy, and Sid can't help but smile back.
Flower, no problem. I have Ovechkin. Show up always. Talk about comments on blog. Ask after you. You think he bad in English? 10 times worse Russian.
Sid bites his lip on a laugh.
I think everyone knew before us, Sid sighs. Even if he can't be that annoyed about it, curled against Gino, warm and lazily rubbing his knee against Gino's.
I decide to chase Sid long before, Gino protests. I get your number for flirt, not hockey. Well, flirt and hockey.
Oh, that was flirting, Sid says, just to confirm it for himself that he hadn't been reading way too much into those texts. Good.
Gino raises his eyebrows.
Everyone you text talk like that to you?
Sid laughs.
No, I thought I was reading you wrong, seeing what I wanted to see, he explains.
What you see? Gino asks,
and the stroking of his fingertips on Sid's shoulder goes from idle to speculative.
You said you wanted to keep me coming, that I should come whenever I liked, Sid says,
and it comes out a little defensive, even though he knows now that Gino actually did intend the innuendo.
Gino grins at him slyly.
Still true, he says.
So maybe I did, Sid confesses, even as he can feel his face turning bright red, flushing all the way down his neck.
Gino stares at him for a moment, clearly passing what Sid means, and then stares at him in a totally different way when he visibly gets it, his expression shifting from confusion to open, honest wanting. Sid knows what that looks like on Gino's face now, can match it to a storm of kisses in Gino's office and his foyer.
I am luckiest in whole world, Gino says sincerely, and rolls them over so that Sid is on top, and Gino combs his fingers through the damp curls at Sid's nape and kisses him like he hasn't had his fill yet and maybe never will. They kiss for a while, and it gets heated in a hurry, mostly because Sid has Gino all spread out underneath him, and he can't pass up the chance to touch Gino as much as he likes, his hands wandering across Gino's shoulders and down his chest, pausing to rub a curious fingertip over one of Gino's nipples to see if he likes it. And from the way Gino clutches Sid's ass, he's guessing yes. And then Gino just flagrantly cheats, going for Sid's neck again as he slides his fingertips down Sid's back to his ass, going right for where he's still slick, still a little worked open, and teases him just a little bit before pressing one finger in, just a little. Sid rocks his hips a little bit, trying to get more, because he likes it and he doesn't care if Gino knows it, especially if it gets Gino to stop messing around and just give him what he wants already.
You like this?
It's only half a question. Sid sometimes thinks that impatience is the key to being completely shameless. He grinds down so he can feel Gino's cock against his hip and says,
I'd like this better.
Can't say no to you,
Gino groans, rolling them again so he's braced above Sid.
Can say wait.
Wait for what? Sid says petulantly.
We'll like this, Gino says,
easily manhandling Sid onto his stomach, kissing along Sid's shoulder blades. Sid can feel Gino moving down his body, the kisses trailing lower, down his spine, into the dip of his back, a teasing bite at the top of his ass. Gino's hands give Sid's ass a few leisurely gropes before Gino holds him open and licks. Sid would describe himself as fairly experienced, but no one has ever done this, and he's regretting that, because apparently he really likes being rimmed. Or maybe it's just that it's Gino's hands, his clever tongue steadily taking Sid apart, leaving him groaning nonsense into Gino's pillows. He doesn't know if he wants Gino to stop teasing or tease him more, because Gino will push his tongue in, and it's close to what Sid wants, but not deep enough, not big enough, and he nearly whines in frustration. And then Gino just licks him some more, tongue fluttering over Sid's hole, while Sid just gasps and moans and tries to rock his hips in Gino's firm grip and fails utterly.
"Like this, made for this," Gino says, voice rough and low. "Like..."
He thrusts his tongue into Sid's ass again, and Sid almost sobs with how good it is.
"More," Sid moans,
and Gino fucks him with his tongue until Sid is shaking in his hands. Sid feels like he's dying a little bit, in the best way possible. Gino is relentless and showing no signs of stopping, which is both amazing and awful. And despite how unbelievably good it feels, it's not what Sid really wants, what he needs. So he pleads, Gino, I need... You have to..." But his words keep failing him.
"You're not ready yet," Gino says,
pressing a kiss against the trembling muscles of Sid's thigh. Sid laughs a little manically.
"I've been ready," he protests.
"Then I'm not finished," Gino says firmly,
and Sid can hear the click of the cap on the lube and he's going to die. Being fingered is better in some ways, closer to what he wants, but even when Gino adds a third finger, having carefully worked him through one, then two, it's not enough, and Sid is actually gasping, begging for Gino to fuck him.
"So good. So good," Gino murmurs,
stroking his free hand over Sid's side, just firm enough not to tickle. It's almost unfair how quickly he's learned Sid's body, learned what he likes, how he likes it, and exactly how far he can keep pushing Sid, even further than Sid thought he could be pushed or would like to be pushed. Sid actually cries out when Gino slips his fingers out, a little unsteady on his knees, trying to brace himself on his hands. Gino wraps a hand around Sid's hip, squeezing gently.
"If you ask me if I'm ready, I swear..."
He loses the rest of the sentence in a moan as Gino laughs and finally pushes in, so slowly that Sid feels like he's lost his grip on time. Because it's stretching on for forever, the feeling of being full, being satisfied, and yet wanting more, deeper, until Gino stops, both hands on Sid's hips now, and Sid can hear him breathing harshly. Gino breathes out, sounding desperate and a little victorious, thumbs stroking against Sid's hip bones.
"Sid, I have to...
anything," Sid says, quickly, not even pausing to think about it. Gino groans and starts fucking Sid in earnest, just long, smooth strokes as deep as he can make them, and Sid lets his head drop as he pushes back into it as best he can, working his hips into it to meet Gino every time, to get just that much more of him. Gino is saying something in Russian, low and fervent, just a stream of words that Sid can't figure out. He suspects there's something like the litany of, "Oh my God, oh my fucking God," on repeat in his head, that Sid can't even manage to get out because he's just trying to breathe.
"Sid, let me..." Gino starts, before sliding his hand around Sid's hip, reaching for Sid's cock,
and Sid shakes his head frantically.
"No, just harder, please. Please, Gino," Sid begs,
and he's too wrung out to hold himself up on one arm, so he lets his weight rest on his shoulder, pushing himself down into the mattress, freeing up a hand so he can touch himself. Gino lets out a strangled moan, and fuck, the angle change gets him even deeper into Sid. The pounding of his hips into Sid's ass sounds obscene. The only other sound, their panting breathing, strangely in sync. But Sid can't stay quiet. His hand fast on his cock,
Gino fucking into him hard and perfect, and he just sobs out Gino's name before coming, Gino fucking him through it. Sid is face down in the mattress, his elbows barely keeping him up, as Gino's hips stutter and slow, coming back to himself, registering the delicious ache in his thighs, his stomach, his arms. It feels like the dizzy euphoria after a long run or a hard-won game, and Sid can feel himself shaking, just a little, the tension giving in his body as he collapses to the bed. Gino slumps on top of him, unmoving, even if Sid can feel Gino breathing hard against his back. He feels absolutely boneless, content to take Gino's weight, and drowse in the feeling of being absolutely well fucked. Gino eventually nuzzles at Sid's neck and moves to get up, and Sid can't help but let out a long whine as Gino pulls out. "Sid," Gino groans, like Sid is doing it to hurt him. Sid wasn't the one moving when no one asked him to. He shivers when Gino gets off of him entirely, heading for the bathroom. "Come back," he says, probably a little petulant sounding. But even if he had the energy to get the blankets, that's no substitute for Gino draped over him. Gino is back a displeasing amount of time later. Sid counts any amount of time apart as displeasing. But he comes bearing a warm washcloth and cleans Sid up gently. Sid shuddering at the feel of terry cloth on sensitive skin. Gino says things that sound sweet, but Sid understands none of them, can only go by the touch of Gino's fingers and the way Gino pulls him close when he's finished, like Sid is completely irreplaceable. And when he shivers in the chill air in the room, Gino just hauls up the blankets from the foot of the bed and tucks them both in, one hand rubbing Sid's arm, before curling protectively across his chest. "Gino," Sid says in a sigh. Gino just nuzzles the crown of his head, and Sid slides off to sleep, as easy as breathing. Sid wakes up and isn't really sure why. He's perfectly content, and that's probably related to the fact that Gino has tangled them up even further in their sleep. Then, Jeffrey's tags clink again, and Sid realizes it was their jangling that woke him up, the only sound in the room until Gino mutters something fondly annoyed-sounding and gets up. Sid's not really at a vocal place yet, in terms of actually being awake, so it's mostly just a grumbled, wordless protest at the situation. He manages to blink his eyes open to Gino tucking the blankets back around Sid tightly, trapping all the residual heat. Consider it, even if it's not as good.
"Just let Jeffrey out," Gino says, voice scratchy and morning rusty.
Sid loves it, and is much more unhappy about Gino moving anywhere but closer.
"Back soon."
Sid's nose wrinkles involuntarily.
"Quick," he insists, sounding a little froggy instead of attractive like Gino.
But it must do something for Gino because his expression goes even softer and he leans in to kiss Sid on his cheek, then his forehead too.
"Keep bed warm for me," he says.
One last kiss, a sweet brush of his lips against Sid's, and Sid tries to lean up into it, but Gino is already reluctantly pulling away. Sid tries to watch Gino pull on a pair of boxers and a beaten-up sweatshirt, advertising something in Cyrillic, but his eyelids keep slipping shut against his will. He dozes until the bed dips behind him and the covers shift, and he gasps when something cold touches his neck.
"Sorry, sorry," Gino rumbles, kissing Sid's neck in apology for his cold nose.
Sid sighs and snuggles back against Gino, who makes a pleased noise in return. He wraps one arm around Sid's middle, and then it's perfect. All sleepy warmth and wrapped up in Gino. Gino's hands idly stroke Sid's skin, just a gentle counterpoint, until Gino starts to kiss the back of Sid's neck and his fingertips brush over Sid's stomach. Sid rolls over then to face Gino,
and he blinks a little in the early morning light and rubs his eyes. But it just earns him a soft smile from Gino. "Morning," Sid says, his voice low and rough from sleep. And probably also, well. Gino rubs his nose against Sid's, which makes Sid smile back. And then Gino presses a kiss to the corner of his mouth. "Sleepy?" Gino asks. Sid hums and pulls himself even closer. And then there's the smooth expanse of Gino's back under his hand, and he traces his fingers down Gino's spine. "Not so sleepy," he allows. Gino's hands stop wandering and start moving more purposefully, and Sid gasps when Gino strokes the back of his thigh, just skirting his ass, before resting on Sid's hip for a moment.
"Make you breakfast?" Gino says hopefully.
"Now?" Sid says plaintively. Gino laughs and says,
"Later."
And then his fingers brush down Sid's stomach and wrap around his cock.
"Too bad clean up last night."
It takes Sid a few seconds to figure out why, and then he says, "I'd probably be all sticky, not... get out the lube."
"Bossy," Gino says admiringly,
and fishes the lube out from under a pillow. Gino hisses when he slicks himself up, but his hand has warmed up the lube when he takes Sid's cock in hand again. As good as it feels, Sid's not just going to lay back. He wants to touch as much of Gino as he can, and Gino groans when Sid grips him just the way Sid likes it, to see if Gino likes it too. The feeling of being completely wrapped up in Gino is satisfying on its own, but it's even better with Gino kissing Sid's neck, hand sliding smoothly over Sid's cock, murmuring things that might be Russian but could be English for all Sid knows. His brain isn't really functioning at a level beyond more and now. Some of that must come across because Gino traces a hand back to T's, his thumb slipping over Sid's hole. "Yes," Sid says, because he knows Gino's fingers are as good as they look, and he can't summon up any embarrassment about his eagerness. Gino groans, mouth open and hot against Sid's neck, hands stilling before biting down. And Sid gasps and tilts his head so Gino can give him more of what he wants.
"Sid,"
Gino says, and it's nearly a moan. Sid pushes back insistently on Gino's fingers, and he can feel Gino suck in a sharp breath. And it's not like Sid has really stopped jerking Gino off, so it must be something else that's turning Gino's crank. He's not entirely sure, but he thinks it's worth a try. "Come on, I want it," he tells Gino. And Gino shudders and pushes one slick finger in. He's still jerking Gino off, slow and steady. And Gino is so hard in his hand, and it seems like it's good for both of them. So Sid says, "More. I can take it. I had all this last night." Tightening his grip around Gino's cock for emphasis. It gets him two fingers and Gino groaning something definitely in Russian. And then Gino crooks his fingers just right and Sid keens.
"Give everything, anything want," Gino says.
And Sid's not the only one with good plans, because Gino gentles his grip and rubs his thumb under the head of Sid's cock while giving Sid three fingers now. Sid's falling down on the job because he can't think. He can only pant and thrash a little in Gino's arms. Gino seems as determined as the night before to completely wreck Sid before coming himself, and Sid wants to keep up, but Gino is angling his fingers perfectly and is just relentless, working Sid hard until he's gasping, too tense to move other than huge, hitching breaths that don't do anything to stop him from being on the edge of coming. He wants to hold out, wants to make it last so badly, but Gino is whispering in his ear, telling Sid to come all over them both. And Sid can't hold out against that. And anyway, he wants to give Gino what he wants too. So Sid lets himself shake apart in Gino's arms, coming all over Gino's hand. He feels wrung out, but when Gino offers Sid a cum-slick fingertip, Sid doesn't hesitate, just sucks Gino's finger down. He keeps his eyes on Gino's while he bobs his head a few times, getting every last drop. And Gino takes in a shaky, shuddering breath. He pulls his finger out of Sid's mouth, only to drag them against the cum on Sid's stomach and offer them to Sid once more. And this time, Sid moans around Gino's fingers while he sucks them clean. When Gino takes his fingers away, Sid starts to jerk him off again. He pushes up into Sid's hands, still, oh fuck, thrusting his fingers into Sid.
Too much? Gino asks.
Sid just moans because he's so sensitive, but it's still so good.
You could fuck me, he says,
less of an offer and more of a plea. Gino groans deep and comes over Sid's fist. They both catch their breath, and Gino goes to pull his fingers out, and Sid can't help but make a protesting noise.
You want more? Gino murmurs, his voice gone gravelly. Not enough.
Sid basically never wants to leave this bed. Breakfast and refractory periods be damned. He says, rolling his hips back into Gino's hand.
Let me make you breakfast, Gino says. Then, after.
He slides his fingers in deep again.
Oh, well, when you put it like that, Sid sighs.
They brush their teeth, and Gino lends him a robe, having vetoed a shower on the grounds that they'd end up right back in bed and starve to death.
Need to keep strength up, Gino says, cracking some eggs in a dish.
I can help. I'm good at breakfast. Bad at everything else, but good at breakfast. Gino gamely hands over a spatula and says,
Bacon okay?
I like you a lot, Sid tells him fervently, and Gino laughs in honest delight. Gino takes every opportunity to kiss Sid when he passes the stove on his way to grab the bread off the counter and put water in the electric kettle. He doesn't keep his hands to himself either, little lingering touches at the small of Sid's back, cupping a hip to move him out of the way, a finger stroking down Sid's neck, and Sid is so distracted he nearly burns their breakfast twice. But he manages not to set the kitchen on fire or ruin their omelette, even if he keeps having to shove the sleeves of Gino's robe up to keep them from dragging into everything. Every so often, even if Gino isn't kissing him or touching him, Sid will glance up from cooking to find Gino giving him a look that straddles the line between sweet and hot. And it maybe makes Sid move a little faster. It's Sid's turn to look when Gino lets Jeffrey in from the backyard, bending over to fill his dishes with food and water. It gives Sid a good view, and he nearly slides the omelette out onto the counter before he catches himself. But breakfast is cozy and quiet, sitting at the little table in Gino's kitchen, not wanting to leave the bright sunlight streaming in the windows, made even better by the way Gino tangles their feet together under the table, the way he keeps making Sid cups of strong black tea, sugary sweet. Sid can hear Jeffrey pad over, his tags clinking as he settles in at their feet, a warm weight tucked against their shins. And Sid honestly can't remember being happier. He's almost unbearably content to drink tea and watch Gino fuss over getting his toast just right. Until Gino is licking his fingers free of jam, and Sid is abruptly reminded of what else those fingers could be doing. He's a little unsure of the rules in this situation. Can he just ask for sex? While he's wondering, Gino catches him looking, well, with intent, and Gino's eyes go half-lidded and dark. Sid doesn't want to be rude, but he has no frame of reference for Gino. Frankly, he's never wanted someone this badly before, never felt impatient and hot all the time. He doesn't know how to convey any of this, or even if he should.
I keep promise, Gino says,
deceptively mild for all he looks like he's about 10 seconds away from making alternative use of the kitchen counter.
Finish breakfast. Then I finish you.
Sure about that? Sid says, and leans back in his chair a little. Gino sets his teacup down on its saucer with a clink. Left to his own devices, Gino would probably continue at a pace that Sid judges to be glacial. He knows his body, and he's ready, and he wants it, so he doesn't see why they can't speed things up a little. Gino makes noises about wanting to be careful, about how Sid must be a little sore, which is not actually a deterrent because Sid likes the feeling of being well used, likes the stretch, likes when it's a little too much. Gino, he says, putting in just a little bit of a whine. Shh, soon, Gino says soothingly, still working him open with only two fingers. Sid thunks his head down on the pillows and says insistently, No, now. In hurry? Gino asks, a smile playing at his lips. Sid looks at him. I just know what I want, he says, and then lowers his gaze pointedly to Gino's cock, which is hard and big and not currently in him. Gino groans. Killing me, Sid. Making hard to do right. I'm not sorry, Sid says, trying to work his hips to force Gino's fingers deeper. I want you. Gino groans again, pressing his face into Sid's thigh. He kisses his way to the vulnerable thin skin of Sid's inner thigh, sucking a little, his teeth worrying little bruises into the pale skin. Sid can't fight back a whimper, and if being vocal, letting Gino know how badly he wants him, gets this kind of reaction, Sid is more than willing to be shameless. I want you in me. It's not enough, Gino. Please, Sid says, just shy of begging. And Gino lets out a broken-sounding string of what Sid assumes is profanity. He can't help but marvel at how much of a reaction he gets from a few simple words. Gino pulls his fingers out, only to push three in. That's it. It's time to play dirty. Sid grabs the backs of his knees and pulls his thighs back to his chest. You could have fucked me this morning, Sid says. Gino makes a face that manages to be both confused and interested. You already come, still want... I always want it, Sid says, going in for the kill. It feels really good after. Everything is just more. Gino actually holds a hand over his eyes for a second before taking a shaky breath and reaching for the bedside drawer. He tears the condom out of the packet, touching himself as little as possible while he puts the condom on, and as soon as it's in place, he runs his hands up from Sid's ass, up his thighs to Sid's calves, pulling at his ankles until Sid's knees are hooked over Gino's shoulders. Sid can't help but shiver, because Gino looks just determined and hungry, and Sid wants him so bad that he's grinding his teeth. He's wondering what else he has to say to get the reaction he wants, because Gino is lining up so slowly, carefully pressing his cock against Sid's hole, but making no move to actually fuck him. But then Gino pushes in steadily, a deep thrust that takes Sid apart, hands clutching at the sheets, so turned on he barely manages to get his hand on himself. Only a few fast strokes in time with Gino's hips before he's coming, back arching, until only his shoulders and head are touching the bed. And Gino keeps going, and Sid is so completely overwhelmed, his body still sparking with pleasure from his orgasm, and Gino's still fucking him into the mattress. The combination leaves him unable to do anything but whimper his approval. He wishes he could tell Gino how good it is, but he can't make the words get from his brain to his mouth. And when Gino really nails the angle, Sid actually cries out, and Gino swears and hits it again and again. And maybe Sid was wrong, maybe it is too much, because his chest feels tight and he can hardly breathe.
but he feels so fucking good he can't even process it, and he can hear himself just panting Gino's name over and over, helplessly.
Sid,
Gino says, and he sounds, God, he sounds incredible, desperate and hoarse and so low that Sid can barely hear him. Sid's eyelids actually flutter before he's not even sure if he comes again. It feels like he does, but mostly he feels absolutely spent, totally wrung out, all his muscles weak and rubbery feeling. And Gino is still just fucking him through it. And Sid's not sure if Gino needs to come now or a minute ago or maybe never, but he's holding out for something and Sid doesn't know what, but maybe it's for him. So he just says, Gino, please, just, I need you to come in me, now. Gino collapses like his strings have been cut, just catching himself on his hands as he shakes apart right above Sid. Sid can feel the burn in his body. He's going to cramp if he spends much longer basically bent in half, but he keeps waiting a moment longer, totally unwilling to move. Gino is still breathing so hard, shaking as he leans back. He lets Sid's legs slip off his shoulders, and Sid makes an involuntary noise as his legs stretch out and Gino pulls out almost a little too fast.
Sorry, sorry, Gino whispers, voice wrecked, falling to the side, pressing sloppy kisses to Sid's shoulder. Give me a moment.
Sid cuts him off with a real kiss, forcing his protesting body to move that much.
No, Gino, that was great. That was just how I needed it.
Gino makes a noise that sounds wounded.
You have to stop or else I die, he says.
And Sid's not sure if he's teasing or being serious. Sid's never felt like this after sex before. Totally limp. Every part of him aching like after the best workouts, the most satisfying games. They both lie there for a while, equally unwilling to move, until Sid shivers a bit because they threw the blankets off the bed earlier. And while the places Gino is slumped over are fine, his toes are cold.
Come, Gino says, groaning.
Although a totally different groan than Sid is used to at this point, as he gets up.
What?
Sid grumbles, because anything that's not touching Gino is out of the question.
Beth,
Gino insists.
I honestly don't think I can stand right now, Sid admits.
Gino smiles, the crooked, sly one that Sid might like best.
Good, you not have to stand,
he says, which is when Sid remembers the giant, claw-footed monster of a bathtub in Gino's bathroom.
Oh, yes, he says fervently.
Gino chuckles at him as he slumps against the bathroom vanity while he waits for the bath to fill. But Sid wasn't kidding. He can't exactly stand on his own 2 feet at the moment. Gino dips his fingers in the water, feels the side of the tub, like he's seeing if it's warm enough to get in. And he must deem it acceptable because he gets in, carefully, slowly.
It's good. Come here, Gino says, holding his arms open in invitation.
Sid's not saying no to that. Gino keeps him tucked close, letting Sid lie between his legs, relaxing back against Gino's chest as the hot water inches up over them. Tension Sid hadn't known he was carrying melts away, steam making his cheeks flush, his hair cling to his neck in damp curls.
So good, Gino says, purring it into Sid's neck, and Sid's cheeks flush even darker.
Beautiful. Gino's arms wrap securely around Sid, the water rushing from the faucet loudly, echoing against the tile. When the tub is nearly full, Gino turns off the faucet with his foot with the ease of long practice. And it's not that Sid has forgotten how tall Gino is, but it's something else to see his long, long legs next to Sid's in the bath. They lie there, the warm water working on Sid's muscles and reducing him to boneless relaxation.
His head is pillowed on Gino's shoulder, and there's nothing more pressing than breathing, luxuriating in the water in Gino's arms. When the water starts to cool a little, Gino just turns on the hot tap with his foot again, and Sid sighs, letting his eyes drift shut. They're lying in the wreckage of Gino's bed, dozing and curled up with each other. Gino's hair is still a little damp when Sid pushes his fingers through it. The sun has gone down, and as much as Sid doesn't want to think about it or leave this room any time soon, it's still Sunday night, and Monday means school. "Wish tomorrow were a holiday," Sid murmurs. It gets a little smile from Gino.
"Snore day?"
"Shh, it's March. Don't jinx us," Sid says. "But I wish..." He looks away, because, seriously, he hasn't known Gino all that long, and he's pretty sure it's too soon to say that he doesn't ever want to leave.
"Stay?"
Gino asks, and Sid's not sure if that's an offer or Gino just trying to figure out what he wants. But Gino tightens his arms around Sid and presses their foreheads together.
"Stay,"
Gino says again, softly.
"I want to,"
Sid says, and worries at his lip with his teeth.
I need clothes and my lesson plans," and he freezes as he remembers. "Math homework. I never finished grading it."
"Two sets of hands," Gino says, wrapping one of his big hands around Sid's. "Work go faster, always."
"Yeah?"
Sid asks, because Gino's a little too good to be real. He's pretty sure most people's first dates don't end in a marathon of sex and grading.
"Selfish, actually,"
Gino says, leaning in to brush his nose against Sid's and kiss him soft and so sweet.
"More time with you."
"Okay," Sid agrees, and he can't stop the smile on his face, which is probably a little goofy. And as much as he doesn't want to be any further than arm's reach from Gino, preferably closer for the foreseeable future, it's probably only polite and normal to give Gino some breathing space.
"So I'll go run by my apartment, pack a..."
Sid trips over "pack a bag," which sounds a little intimidating even in his mind. "Pack up my lesson plans, be right back." Because Gino said stay, but Sid doesn't want to overstay his welcome or scare Gino off.
"Go, come back soon. I make dinner."
Okay, Sid says, and then forces himself to sit up. He looks around the room and finds the jeans that he last wore yesterday. He has no idea where his shirt went, or his underwear. At least his shoes are in plain sight, even if he's a little appalled at himself for not taking them off by the front door.
"Borrow shirt?"
Gino suggests, levering himself out of bed and padding naked over to the dresser. He fishes out a t-shirt and hands it to Sid. It looks familiar. And then Sid realizes it's one of the zoo staff t-shirts, with a little penguin logo on the chest.
"Look good,"
Gino says when Sid pulls it on, and then his smile goes sly.
"Not so tight like other shirt."
Sid feels his face go red, but he doesn't try to defend himself.
"Hurry, come back," Gino urges.
Sid nods and is already turning to head downstairs when Gino catches him, pulls him close and kisses him breathless, promising things Sid wants so much, then stepping away.
"For car trip, keep you warm,"
Gino says, mischievous and pleased with himself.
"Right," Sid says,
and it takes a very deep breath and a lot of self-control to leave. He closes the front door gently behind him. The quicker he goes, the sooner he can come back, he reminds himself, and fishes in his jacket pocket for his keys. It's not very far to his apartment. The route is more annoying than long. Crossing the river, driving for a while, crossing back over the same river, crossing another river. But that's Pittsburgh. And for all its bridges and nonsensical traffic patterns, he loves it.
and it's begun to feel like home. Thankfully, the roads are relatively traffic-free. The little snarls on tricky merge lanes easily avoided, the sky darkening as he drives. He responsibly checks his mailbox, then takes the stairs out to his apartment two at a time, but being careful to be quiet in case Mrs. Boyle is already asleep. His school bag is right where he left it Friday evening, the math homework still in two piles on the kitchen table. It's easy enough to scoop it back into its manila folder, hands automatically twisting the red string as he glances around, trying to think of anything else he needs. It only takes a minute to put his outfit together on a single hanger, making sure to carefully loop a tie around the neck of his button-down, leaving it on the doorknob as he dumps the contents of his gym bag on his bed, tossing his dress shoes in instead. It's only a few more seconds for socks, underwear, a detour into the bathroom for his toothbrush. He glances at his watch as he gathers up the school bag, the gym bag, the hanger. It's only been 8 minutes since he got out of the car. He frowns, wondering if he's giving Gino enough time to himself. But suppose as if Gino is cooking dinner, it's only appropriate to hurry. Sid is juggling his bags and knocking on Gino's door 49 minutes after leaving in the first place. He's a little worried when Gino doesn't answer right away, but he can hear Jeffrey, and Gino flings open the door a few seconds later with a dish towel in his hands. Sid notes that Gino has pulled on sweatpants but declined to get dressed otherwise and feels his throat go dry. "Hi," he says, and then feels a little dumb.
"Hi," Gino says, beaming,
and takes the hanger from Sid's hands and pulls him inside. Dinner is pasta and chicken with vegetables, which Sid compliments Gino on, and Gino confesses that it came out of a bag. Like Sid can even judge. He insists on helping Gino clean up when they're finished, Sid handing wet dishes to Gino for drying. When he opens the sink drain, he musters up the courage to turn to Gino and say,
So, when can I see you again?
Gino's brow furrows.
Seeing now, he says, obviously perplexed by the question.
Right, Sid says, then stops.
I meant, I like you. Can we, I don't know your work schedule, but maybe later this week we could meet up again, or this weekend. You're probably busy, I just...
Tomorrow, Gino interrupts him.
Tomorrow?
Sid echoes.
And day after, and day after that,
Gino says, and pulls Sid close, kissing him.
I can work with that, Sid says,
and they smile at each other helplessly.
Oh my God, put it away, Flower says, when he drags himself into the teacher's lounge on Monday morning.
What? Sid says, putting the last of the star stickers on last night's hurriedly graded math homework. Flower makes a gesture in the direction of Sid's face. That. Like all of that. What did you... Flower narrows his eyes.
How was your trip to the zoo this weekend?
It was very nice. I met some of the other zookeepers, Sid says, completely truthful.
Uh-huh. And how was your trip to the zoo?
Flower says, rolling his eyes. Sid frowns.
I just said...
Flower raises his eyebrows at him.
Your hickey is showing, Flower says, pointing at Sid's neck, the beginning of a truly shit-eating grin on his face.
What hickey? Sid says, but his hand has already flown up to cover where Gino had bitten down in the shower that morning.
What hickey?
Ugh, you're worse at this than the juniors. They at least say it was a flat iron. 16-year-old girls are more subtle than you are.
My sister is 16, Sid says, frown deepening.
You should call her next time. She can talk you through buying concealer in the drugstore so your mom won't notice you've been stepping out with a boy, Flower advises. Sid opens his mouth with any number of complaints about that sentence, but Flower just pushes on. Anyway, ask him when he's free. You're bringing him over for dinner with me and Vero.
Sid stares at Flower distrustfully.
Why? Flower rolls his eyes.
Because we want to get to know him. He's nice, you know. Good at hockey.
And you, apparently. Sid doesn't even know what to say to that because he's embarrassed and happy and excited. So finally, he settles on,
"Yeah, okay,
I'll ask." Flower looks mollified.
"Good. Get me coffee, will you? I am so friggin' tired. Like, if you thought your field trip was intense..."
Okay, Sid says hastily, trying to head that off at the pass. But the smile never leaves his face. Epilogue. "Dr. M!" Brianna yells. Inside voice, Brianna, Sid reminds her gently. Even though we're at the zoo, it's still school. "Dr. M!" she calls, a little quieter.
"Yes?"
Gino says. "What's this penguin's name?" she asks. The kids love that Gino can tell them apart instantly. They tease Sid for being slower. But Sid instantaneously knows who that penguin is because...
"That Bo,"
Gino says, crouching down to her eye level.
"Still baby, not have his first birthday yet."
"Where are his mommy and daddy?" Brianna asks, eyes wide, as she glances around, like she can figure it out if she looks hard enough. "Bo has two daddies, Brianna," Sid explains, when Gino shoots him a look as if to say, "It's your show." "Where are they?" she asks, totally not caring at all, and Sid can't help but smile as Gino points at Paul and Bob. "Are they gonna have another baby? I have a new baby brother."
"Have to come back to zoo next year, find out," Gino says, smile a little secretive.
"Come on, it's lunchtime," Sid says, motioning to the other chaperones. "Okay, class, make a bubble. We're going to walk down to the picnic table. I want you to show our parents and Dr. M how a second grade line follows directions, right?" It's a vain hope. They're all gonna go nuts when they go by the polar bear, but he at least has to try. As predicted, there's a 5-minute detour to stare at the polar bear, who, to be fair, is being very cute, playing with a soccer ball. But eventually, they get down to the PNC Pavilion, and there's the minor mayhem of sorting out everyone's lunches, making sure Kyleen gets her gluten-free lunch, and Ryan and Cole both are at a peanut-free table. Gino passes Sid his lunch, leftovers from dinner last night. The chaos is mostly controlled, the kids basically all sitting down and eating their lunches, and with the parent volunteers keeping an eye on everyone, Sid feels justified in sitting next to Gino and eating with him. He also feels justified in removing the carrots from his lunch and giving them to Gino, because Sid likes carrots just fine, but he hates them when they're not crunchy. Gino wordlessly gives Sid his zucchini, and Sid just takes a few minutes to enjoy his lunch and Gino's company in relative peace. "You know," Sid says, when he catches sight of the dipping dot stands, "we met here almost a year ago." "Lucky," Gino says. "Spill fish on handsome men, fall in love." That strategy never comes up in advice columns, Sid says, trying to stifle a smile and failing.
"Penguin secret," Gino says sagely. "First, throw fish, then nest."
"Speaking of nests," Sid says, "I got a call from the realtor. Can we go right after you're finished here?" Gino thinks it over.
"5, yes. This house it?"
Sid shrugs, because he's not willing to jinx it, even though he has a good feeling.
"We'll see."
"Superstitious," Gino says, voice so warm. "I'll get back to work," Sid says, elbowing him where the kids can't see. "Don't forget, Flower wants us to babysit tomorrow night." Gino nods.
"Let Jeffrey out when you come home tonight. Pick me up from here," Gino suggests.
"Works," Sid says. The kids are getting a little rowdy, so he figures their time is up. Sid makes it a point to responsibly dispose of their trash, taking care to separate out the recyclables, and the kids follow suit. He rejoins Gino off to the side and sighs.
"Half down, half to go." "You'll make it. Plan so much, of course go well," Gino says, teasing mixed in with his soothing tone.
Sid gives him a look, but he's pretty sure it's not so much annoyed as terribly, terribly fond. Then he hears someone carol,
"Oh, Mr. Crosby!"
and both he and Gino wince.
Have to go, love you, bye, Gino says, and then makes his escape.
Gino! Sid protests, but there's nothing for it. He turns to face Ovechkin, who has an unholy gleam in his eye.
We need pictures for the blog, Ovechkin says, very seriously. Also, interview. I think we revamp whole field trip page on website.
Alex, come on, Sid says.
Who helped you practice Russian for very important question?
Ovechkin says sweetly. Sid glares at him in frustration, but Ovechkin has him there. Fine, he says grudgingly. Ovechkin wraps a companionable arm around his shoulder.
You gonna ask soon, right?
What if it's too soon? Sid blurts out. Ovechkin gives him a look.
He wants to find you an egg, Crosby.
Which, Gino kept being insistent on looking for three bedrooms, so it's not like Sid didn't have an inkling, but... really? Ovechkin snorts.
He try old-fashioned way, but for all your hips, no luck.
Sid covers his face with his hand. Oh my god, he mutters.
Nothing to worry about,
Ovechkin says reassuringly, and it's almost nice, but then...
I'll make great godfather.
I'm not having this conversation with you, Sid hisses, because there are parents around, starting to look a little antsy now that all the kids are done with lunch. It's time for a strategic retreat. All right, everyone, who's ready to learn about red pandas? The kids shriek happily, and Ovechkin gives him a look.
I'm taking pictures, he says,
and steps away to take the lens cap off the camera around his neck.
You need me to show you where panda exhibit is?
Nah, Sid says, and gives the aquarium one last look. I think I know my way. The end. You've just finished listening to Two to Tango. If you enjoyed the story, please leave 20-something and the Hoyden some feedback on Archive of Our Own. If you enjoyed my reading of the story, please leave me some feedback at Archive of Our Own as Lunchy or on Tumblr and Twitter as Lunchy_pods. The music used in this recording was Navy Blues by Washington. And lastly, some reader free talk. Hi, this is Lunchy. I spent a week being sick while I was making this podfic, and in trying to go and do some re-edits and some pickups and stuff, I just found that, oh, I'm no longer sick, so it doesn't really sound the same. So luckily I just mostly edit as I go, so hopefully it doesn't affect anything too much. But yes, if you did sense that my voice was changing a little bit between sections, maybe it was probably because I was sick or I'm just terrible. You can make up your own mind about that. This is one of the first stories that I read when I got into reading Sid and Gino. And it was actually quite nostalgic to podfic it, because there's a lot of characterization in here that has since moved on. For example, in this story, Gino is quite much the perfect boyfriend, and Sid still uses his flip phone, which is really funny.
I actually had originally put in iPhone sound effects for when he was receiving Gino's text messages. And then in the next section, it says, oh, well, his text messages, he just can't receive mass texts. Oh, and I was like, oh, no, right, because this was written in the era where Sid didn't have a smartphone. So I then had to go and change the sound effects for, like, to a Nokia ringtone. I don't know if he really had a Nokia, but that's what it is now, in this podfic at least. I was swearing about this on Twitter and somebody said, you know, why do you care? Just leave it as the iPhone. And the reason that I just changed it was because there's a difference in hearing an iPhone notification and hearing a Nokia notification. Instantly it tells you stuff about that person, about how stubborn Sid is about his technology, and maybe he isn't really as in tune as he believes he is. So there is a bit of a story there to tell, rather than, you know, if there was a difference between an iPhone sound and an Android sound. So those kinds of things, I don't know, I find them to be, like, I want to get them right, and therefore I changed it, despite, you know, probably not mattering that much to people. Also in this story, we see those fantastic foils, Flower and Ovechkin, being the, you know, antagonists as they are towards Sid, making him do stuff and admit stuff that he doesn't really want to admit to. When he's talking to Flower and when he's talking to Ovechkin, those bits are really the ones that are the most fun to do, because they're really, you know, having so much fun having a go at Sid. And so there's a lot of amusement from my end being able to perform both aspects of that. As always, the Hoyden and 20-something have a real skill at making banter, so it's a real joy to be able to perform those. There's also a takeaway from this fic. It's not just entertainment, but there's a real educational aspect that you can take away with this, and I'm referring to the part where they are cooking steak in the kitchen, and Sid can't wait, or doesn't want to wait, when Gino insists on resting the steak. Kids, rest your steaks. Rest them for half the amount of time that you cook them, so that they keep cooking and they remain juicy and they don't spill everywhere. Like, I know that you were really in a hurry to have sex, but you know what? You probably appreciated that steak more because, you know, it was rested. So I hope Gino has taught you better now, Sid. What made this bit quite memorable for me was just this very clear image of Gino and Sid looking after the penguin that has a foot problem. And Gino says, oh, he's got Bumblefoot. Look, even their illnesses have such cute names. And I just thought, oh my God, that is adorable. And for some reason, that really stuck with me. And of course, the fact that they use the 3 to Tango picture book, which is adorable and educational as well. I think I probably messed this up a few times, but it was very strange, because this was one of the earlier fics that were written for Sid and Gino, but a lot of Gino's dialogue in this fic has him starting sentences with I instead of I'm. So, like, instead of saying, like, I'm have pain in leg, Gino in this fic would have probably said something like, I have pain in leg, without the I'm particle that is relatively predominant in Gino's speech nowadays, I guess. So it was really interesting to see, like, because it was an earlier written fic, how things have changed that you might not have realised. I chose Navy Blues because I really like Washington. I think she's an amazing songwriter, and she always has these really great hooks and all this kind of thing. But there seem to be parallels in the lyrics. You know, she talks about packing your bag and enjoying the other person because they seem so free, love you like an animal, being able to come and go because the other person allows them to do that. And I guess this might be one of those instances where I chose the song and then somehow I'm just making sure that it wraps around the story rather than trying to get a song that already fits the story. I don't know. I like the song and I hope you enjoy it too. So last thing, coincidentally, I'm going to post this in the beginning of April, which coincides with the Podfic Feedback Challenge that is run by We Love Podfic on Tumblr and Twitter. Just basically a challenge to try and get people to leave more comments on Podfics. And they've got some really cool initiatives and mini challenges, like, you know, leaving feedback for podfics that have zero comments on them, of which I think they said that there was 80 pages on AO3 that had that were podfics with zero comments. And you can, you know, get more points if you give feedback on those particular podfics. There is giving feedback in a non-traditional sense. One of them included mime and interpretive dance. I don't think but basically they would just like to increase people's feedbacking habits. So if you're a fan of podfic, please check them out. They are run from Tumblr and from Dreamwidth. We love podfic. They also have a postcard challenge, which is writing postcards to podficers that have given their address to a moderator. And then, you know, receiving in the mail a postcard from somebody who's enjoyed their podfic. I think it's a really cute idea. I'm definitely going to do some. A lot of podficers, including myself, have given their addresses to the moderator, Dodificus. And if you want to check out that list, I'll put a link into the AO3 post. But if you know a podficker who you'd like to send a postcard to, perhaps direct them to that post as well and they can get involved in it. And if you'd like to send me a postcard, that would be awesome. You can private message Dodificus on Dreamwidth or on Twitter to get that information. And there's 30 podfickers who've done the same thing. So if you would like to maybe check that list out, get other podfickers involved and start sending some snail mail to people, it'd be really lovely. Anyway, that's running for a fortnight. It's running until April the 15th, if you want to get in on that. I don't know whenever you're going to be able to listen to this, but maybe it'll be before then, and maybe it pikes your interest. I don't know. That's it from me. I hope you guys have a great day. Thank you for listening. See ya. Bye.